Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of the Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
The following is a production of the Emerson News Network.
You're with your baby, and you're parked alone on a summer night. You're deep in love, but you're deeper in the woods. You think you're doing all right. Did you hear that voice? Did you see that face? Or was it just a dream? This can't be real, that only happens, babe, on the movie screen.
This is a terrible song.
Yes, it is. Why are we listening to this?
Well, the thing is, I say that now, like I just said, this is a terrible song, as though it had, I was just now realizing it. I was just sort of, it's not like I wasn't aware of that. It's sort of like the horror strikes me anew every time I play this.
What is this exactly, and from whence does it come?
What do you mean? What?
I don't know the song. I'm not familiar with the song.
Do you have no idea why we're playing this?
No.
Okay, hold on a second.
Oh, is this about Friday the 13th? This is about...
Wait for it. Hold on.
Oh, okay, there we go.
Why are you playing this song? Well, now
Now I get it.
But now you've absolved me of all of the guilt I was having about subjecting people to this, because you have just educated yourself a little bit more. You have taken another step into a larger world, Don. The world of popular entertainment. This is also from the Constrictor album, by the way, which is the album on which... this is, by the way, the first album on which Kip Winger was a member of the Alice Cooper Band.
This is from a period when I was not listening to Alice Cooper at all. I remember hearing about this song, but I don't think I ever heard it.
Wait a minute, how about this? Hold on a second, let's see. Because I was going to put together a whole, like, there's a curse on that mind, you know, that guy. Let's see, I think I've got this, actually. I think I may have... This is actually just my fault. I was kind of running late because I was answering a lot of email during the break here, so I didn't really get a chance to put together the Friday the 13th montage that I might ideally have had here. Let's see if I can just do this. Hold on. Because I can't listen to this anymore. Hold on a second. I was going to do this, actually. Because at the beginning of the show every day, we do a little, a clip from a film or from a television program or something. And I was going to do a whole thing where I merged together he actually does it here. Well, this may not even be it. I thought I had the audio from when the old guy in the bicycle actually says, "If you go to Camp Blood, you'll die." I may not. Hold on, let me check one more place here. Hold on, let's see. This is all working out so much more anticlimactically than I'd anticipated. Let's see. Jason dreams of Camp Blood. Well, sure. Let's see what that sounds like. Hold on. Jason dreams of Camp Blood. Do you want to hear Jason dreams of Camp Blood or Revenge for Mother?
Oh, Revenge for Mother.
All right, here's Revenge for Mother. Let's see. These all lack a certain kind of energy. These aren't really, I don't feel like it's really giving us the opening show momentum that we typically, Here's a track. This is from Friday the 13th, the original. This is called, here's a track called We Weren't Doing Nothing. Well, let's see here. Let's see what We Weren't Doing Nothing sounds like. Now, let's see, just a, None of these have any source dialogue or anything. Okay, I'm going to try one more, and then I'm just going to give up here. No, okay. No, that's not good either. This one's called Excerpt. This is from Friday the 13th, 2 in 1991. This is called Excerpts in Terror. Okay, that's better. See, this would have given us like a little bit of an energetic start to the show.
Yeah.
Boy, Bernard Herrmann needs to be suing somebody.
If only he wasn't dead.
I'm looking at you, executor. All right. And then finally, then it would have ended with this. Hold on. It would have ended with... This is the theme from what Friday the 13th movie, Don?
Friday the 13th, number 6.
You're just guessing. You don't know.
I have no idea.
This is from Friday the 13th, 3D.
Oh, all right.
1982. Starring Richard Brooker as Jason Voorhees. No, I'm sorry, Walter Brooker.
I
You don't know anything about Friday the 13th, do you? You sicken me.
I know that...
I revile you in the strongest terms.
I know that in the very first movie... It turned out it was actually Jason's mother, and so.
Do you know that because of Wes Craven?
Because I've seen it,
okay.
And because so therefore all of the other movies are lies.
That's not true. The other movies are not lies at all. There's a logical. Here's the thing about Friday the 13th. At least in that world, in the in-world setting of those films, there is a logical through line to the plot. It's tinged with elements of the supernatural. It doesn't make a lot of real world sense, but in universe, there is total. This never gets any better.
No.
This, by the way, so this is the 3D version, which contains a lot of sequences where a guy, literally, there's a long sequence where a guy is doing that thing where it's like the paddle ball game, where it's just like the balsa wood ping pong thing with the ball tethered to it, and he's going bong, bong, bong at the camera for like an hour, I swear to God.
This is like the most horrible dance club ever.
Here's one called... I don't even think I'm going to play this because I don't think it could measure up to this disco mix of the theme. There's one called Fire Poker in the Eye, which is sort of great and pornographic and awesome all at once. Friday the 13th, 3. So, yeah, there's also a sequence where the guy shoots a spear gun right at... It's like it's coming out of the screen, Don. It's like it's coming right at you, the viewer.
You know, I'm fairly sure I actually saw that, but I just don't remember.
I've seen all of them. I say that with... I was going to say not with pride, but it is with pride, actually. I've seen all 11 now Friday the 13th films. That would be 1, 2, 3D, Final Chapter, A New Beginning, Jason Lives, New Blood, Jason Takes Manhattan, Jason Goes to Hell, Jason X, Freddy vs. Jason.
And Jason X is the one where he's in space?
That is the one where he has a cybernetic exoskeleton.
Yeah.
But again, logically... Well, this whole opening sucked. All right. By the way, I'd like to thank whoever is it who sent me an email. Said, this is riveting. Thanks so much. Appreciate that. Okay, then. Why, hello, it is 36 minutes after the hour of one, and this the month of May in the year of our Lord, 2011. Thank you for drawing near that ye might be entertained on this Friday, the 13th. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, looming high above the milk packing district in the heart of beautiful Southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor. Hello, Don.
Hiya.
You had the giddiest look on your face right now. Were you looking at an amusing picture of cats doing something that cats aren't typically photographed doing?
No, I was just catching up on some stuff on our Rick Emerson Show Facebook page, where I had asked people to give me blurbs for this flyer I'm putting together.
Is blurbs what kids call the tubes of nitrous now?
Well, no, blurbs, of course, are things where it's just supposed to say, hey, 32 cents, it's great, or it stuffs entertainment in my ear holes.
I sometimes feel it's worth my money.
And then, of course, some people just took it as an opportunity to basically share what they don't like about the show.
I can't believe what I'm hearing.
And my favorite is, I was just seeing this one that I hadn't seen before, where a guy saying, He apparently, because there's some issue at home about arguing about spending money, so he's not actually a subscriber listener at the moment. Although said, honestly, if it was the old format with Tim and Sarah, I'd suck it up and fight the fight. Not that I don't like Dawn or anything.
I'm just not willing to expend any effort or 32 cents for her.
Right, exactly.
You're worth, 24 cents maybe, just not the 32. Okay, I understand.
Yeah.
All right. If there was like a forever stamp that he could get for you.
But I do like that. Not that I don't like Don or anything, but,
No offense, Don. All right.
So that just made me giggle.
Oh, it's good to be alive.
Yeah.
All right, it is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It is Friday. It's 503-505. See, here's the thing. I could have just ended that whole opening segment just going to the Rebecca Black, but then I didn't want to do that, So I just, I wasn't going to be that guy. I wasn't going to inflict that on everybody. It is 503-505-6964. That's 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like. It's rick at rickemerson.com. That is rick at rickemerson.com. Don Taylor can be emailed if you like it. If that's your thing, if that's what you're into, if that's how you get your thrills, you sick little bastards. It's Don, D-A-W-N, at rickemerson.com. Don at rickemerson.com. If you're really good and polite, maybe she'll tell you again in graphic detail about spilling something all over the all over large sections of her clothing. Let's see. What else? You can text if you like. That's the text box open on the website, and also we're on Skype. That is Rick Emerson Show. That's all one word. Rick Emerson Show via Skype. Or if you just like to snark about my lack of a produced opening for today's program, because you can do that too. I can't really fault you for that. Hello, Don. You look like you're about to say something.
No, I was just trying to figure out if I was starting to get sick before I drank the coffee beverage that exploded or afterwards. But I think I was already feeling poorly before that. I was going to blame it on that, but then I realized, no, I was already under the weather before that happened. So never mind.
So do you think the coffee beverage exploded because it was filled with some sort of virus, or it had botulism, or it was
something
just...
No, because I realized that I was already sick before that happened. I developed some kind of food poisoning, because it was just like I was just all shivery and sweaty and feverish last night, and today I just feel like I mentioned in the last hour, I feel like I have a hangover, even though I did nothing to deserve having a hangover. I just have this headache and I'm kind of queasy, and so that's why in the car this morning driving in I was thinking, so it would be a bacterial thing, not a virus. And then I'm thinking, so what is the difference? And I spent the entire drive into work this morning just racking my brain and realizing I really didn't know the difference. I knew that bacteria will get into your bloodstream and then you can inhale viruses from being around people, but I didn't know. And so then we talked about it in the last episode of Legion of News, and we cleared it up, the difference between viruses and bacteria.
Maybe your body has just reached some stage of obsolescence. Maybe it's just maybe you've just reached the end of the warranty, and things are just going to start disintegrating.
I am so done with being made out of meat. I really am. I am just ready for my robotic exoskeleton to just carry my brain about from place to place.
You could probably get a metal leg. I mean, they have made great advances in that. I mean, seriously.
I just want all of it to just be something that I have to spray a little Windex on and polish every once in a while, and that's it.
Just give yourself a good riveting, and then you're good to go.
Really. I mean, as much as of all of the sort of bodily pleasures, I would even give up, food and sex if I just didn't have to have all of the maintenance of
everybody's
being,
stunned to hear that,
being
by the
way, made out of meat.
Did we talk about Jason Crump's cybernetic drum kit?
Yes. Yeah, we did.
I forget it was off the air of the, but yeah. So Crump has the he has the bum leg, and he was a drummer or is a drummer, but he was in a band. Yeah, and so at one point he had designed this drum kit where the kick drum would just mount directly in as a prosthetic in and of itself. So he could like, so basically like a vacuum cleaner with many interesting attachments, he'd be able to detach his prosthetic leg and then like right below the knee, I guess is where they would have done the amputation, or right around the knee. And then he would have been able to go like and just click the kick drum right in there. And he's, you know, and he would have been like part man, part machine, all drummer. I mean,
nice.
It would have, he really would, he would have been in fact a drumming machine. He would have been a, he would have been like a drumborg of some
drumborg
kind. Yes, exactly. They could have been at drums by Drumborg 9000, and then he would have been, you know, and thrown his sticks at the audience.
Can we pitch that as a sci-fi movie?
Yes,
like right now, Drumborg
to follow Metalocalypse or that show.
Yeah,
Death Clock. You know, here's the thing: when the crowd shouts Death Clock. On
Metalocalypse,
which is one of those things I could normally say, but it's like today, it's like my mouth is just made out of marbles. When the crowd shouts, Death Clock, I often wonder, and I really do wonder this often, I wonder if that is a little inside animation joke because of season one of Star Blazers, Space Cruiser Yamato, where the crowd on Gamelon is shouting, Deslock. A lot. And I think about that, and then I realize there's probably no way to figure out the answer, and also I'm stupid for wondering about that. Like, I could be learning about history. I could be studying math. I could be spending time with the poor and the infirm. Mm-hmm. And instead, I'm just at home just picking my nose and thinking about a show that I watched like 50 years ago. Anyway, somebody wants to know, can the next Joe contest just be guess what's on Dawn's shirt? Yes.
Yes.
Instead of mystery noise, it'll be name that stain.
Yeah.
Let's see, Rick, last hour you were talking about a new listener who had an APO address. We actually just figured this out, but he says, yes, that is Armed Forces Europe. So we have, and as Cheryl actually said, Cheryl just says, we were trying to figure out where the new subscriber was from, and I said, well, it's from somewhere. I said, APO, AE something, I don't know where it is. And she said, by the way, Jordan, this is the new listener, Jordan is Armed Forces Europe. And then she just said, how do these people even find you? And I don't really know the answer to that. I know that we have a lot of listeners who are in the military, and I think that's, you know, that it's not just that it's like a close-knit community, but it's also where you have the same, you know, a lot of times you have the same, you're living in the same conditions, and you have access to the same outlets and venues for entertainment. So I think a lot of things, you know, like if you find something that's sort of interesting that is also available in the region or the country where you're living, I think that you probably tell people, you know, who are also, you know, looking for things to listen to, and you're like, hey, I found this great thing. Since we're like spending our time living in like this mud hole or whatever, like here's the thing you can listen to. So we want to welcome a brand new listener and subscriber today, Jordan. Listening to us via Armed... he's a member of the Armed Forces, but listening to us in Europe. He's a member of Armed Forces Europe. Also, Irvin. I think we mentioned Irvin, who was listening as of this week. Melody's mom. We'll read those emails here in just a bit. And so forth. All right. I had other stuff I was going to say here at the top, but I don't remember what it is. Have I done the whole thing with the phone numbers? Because I have. 503-505-6964. You can email us, rick@rickemerson.com. Dawn, D-A-W-N, @rickemerson.com. Or you can text via the box on the website, or you can go to Skype. It's Rick Emerson Show. That is all one word via Skype. Dawn Taylor is tracking the following headlines for you on this Friday.
Well, Social Security and Medicare are running out. Oregon senators are thinking about letting us drive 75 miles an hour. And a woman shot an intruder 9 times in self-defense.
9 times?
9 times.
I don't remember shooting an intruder 9 times.
He just wouldn't stop moving.
I was doing Cindy Pickett there.
Oh.
Yeah, never mind. Yeah. How are you, Dawn, other than hungover and falling apart?
Other than that, I'm great.
Okay. That issue, that small wrinkle aside, everything is coming up roses.
I feel so horrible. It's just, it's kind of fascinating. But, you know, it's that thing that... I never would have thought of myself as somebody who of having like a work ethic, you know.
That's good that you never would have thought of yourself as having a work ethic.
No, because I know how lazy I am, and that really, given my druthers, you know, there's people like you who's like, if I'm not working, I go crazy. I honest to God, I could just sleep until noon, get up, watch reruns of sitcoms all day, surf the internet, go back to bed.
Is this a theoretical assumption, or have you tested this theory?
No, I know that for a fact. Because,
okay.
Again, I was semi-employed freelance writer for a number of years. And I know I'm completely capable of just getting up in the morning going, nah, not today.
Not going to do it.
No.
And you just go back to bed.
And then go, wow, it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon and I'm still wearing pajamas.
Which is sort of great. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, really, it's, you know, there are worse ways to spend one's existence if you can get away with that for long sections of time.
Yeah, so it is very weird for me to be in this position of just going, I got to go to work. I'm not actually, you know, bleeding out of my eyeballs, so I have to actually be there to,
well, I'm sorry to
entertain the people.
Sorry to harsh your mellow, make you put on pants and everything.
I know.
I didn't.
The things I do for you and for the listeners.
You know, and I'm such an idiot. I didn't even, last hour in Legion of News, we're doing the whole show here. Last hour in Legion of News, I didn't even get a handle on my own thoughts long enough to thank everybody who came out to the signing last night. So I'll do that on Monday. Will you do me a favor and not let me forget?
I will not let
to
you
do
forget.
That on Monday. Well, here's the thing. No offense. Was somebody out there who's not Don remind me when Monday comes to thank the Legion of News listeners?
Sure, you know, Cheryl might do that for you.
Well, Cheryl can do that. Who came out to the signing last night? I do want to take this opportunity, really, honestly, seriously, just to thank. Just to thank everybody who came to Barnes & Noble last night for the Zombie Economics signing. It was, and I know you weren't able to make it out because you were at home sort of fighting off infection, and it sounds like failing to fight it off. It sounds like it would have been a wash because you feel terrible anyway.
Well, I'm not sweating and shivering anymore, so that's a plus.
So last night, you know, you were at home feeling, I'm just saying, that way you could have avoided both of us feeling terrible, Dawn.
Were you feeling terrible?
No.
No, you probably felt awesome. I understand it went brilliantly. There were lots of people there, and everyone loved you, and you read the zombie book and standing in front of Winnie the Pooh.
I was just talking about your absence and the fact that it left a cold spot in my heart where the warm blanket of dawn usually is. It went really, really well, and let's see. Okay, so by the way. Just now, so Cheryl was saying yes. There's a photo gallery from last night that we'll post a link to here in just a few. So we have over 200 photos Cheryl took last night. She was sort of there was a lot of we had a lot of people just doing the photographs kind of the whole night through. So we have a photo gallery that's up. So we'll post a link to that to last night's photo gallery here in just a few. But it was really quite something, and it's just like you feel like a jackass just sitting and talking about this great thing that I did or that I was part of, and I think the reason I can do it is because I am just one part of it. I get the reflexive weird the awkwardness talking about stuff like that. But I didn't know what to expect. It's not like I've ever I'm the guy where it's like old hat or something. I mean, it is a thing that I had, like zero experience with going and like reading a book and doing a thing. And it was, and by the way, it was just as I imagined, standing on that Winnie the Pooh stage with a sort of like kid, like the 100 Acre Woods or whatever thing behind me, was just awesome. Because the deal when you go to a reading, you read like a section from the book and then you do a little Q&A and then you do the signing. And so the section for the book, so because the book is half fictional narrative, sort of zombie adventure, and then half financial strategy and philosophy and whatever put in that. So I read a few pages that were the zombie narrative, the fictional story, and then I read a few pages of like the actual financial section. And I read two that went together as, the narrative and the metaphor, just so people kind of get an idea of how the book's dynamic worked. And of course, it's a zombie story, so it does become sort of dark and unpleasant and gruesome. And it's like at one point I realize that I'm like surrounded by Dora the Explorer dolls. And there's just like a whole bunch of like, read to me Elmo things. And there's
And I'm assuming occasionally the parent wandering through maybe with a child to go get a kid's book.
That's what I was going to say. We had what I might refer to as a sizable crowd. We had there was a substantial number of attendees, but then they were like, yes, like, because it is like a bookstore. Like, it's not like I'm not Elvis. It's not like they closed the theater for me. Like, there's actual business going on, and so there's parents back there, first of all, wondering like why all the guys in like D20 shirts are standing around in the kids section, because that's a thing. Let's be honest. You walk into the children's section of a bookstore, and there's like a guy in a black trench coat, and like a scraggly red beard, just sort of staring a lot. You go like, well, what is up with this? But But yeah, occasionally somebody, like a parent, would be bringing a kid through with a hand, and I would say, and then as the splattery molded brains, you know, drip down to the, you know, whatever, and it's like, yeah, but one must roll with the one must just roll with the punches and take it as it goes. But it was really great. And so Lisa was not able to fly out last night, and we did goddamn mother effing Skype. So I tested. No, because the thing is that we were going to spring Lisa on people via Skype because she wasn't able to be there. And it's like, you know, CNN is like, you know, this has been like a crazy news month. And so she hasn't been able to block out like 2 or 3 days to get away. And so I had this whole scheme. I'm like, we'll go there. And I said, when I go up to do this, we planned it all out. I'm like, I'm going to have you log on to Skype before the reading even begins, you know, and then I'll have the laptop pointed away from the crowd. They won't even see you're there. You can just, and then you can see me and you'll see when I'm getting ready to introduce you. And then I will say like, who's our special guest? And like turn the laptop around and like Max Headroom, she would just be on the screen and say like, hello, everybody. Worked all day, worked flawlessly. And then literally like 45 seconds before the thing starts, it just went dead.
Oh,
it just, and like, so I'm crouching down behind a Clifford the Big Red Dog display trying to get the Skype thing. And Jeff McGinley pops up and goes, why are you on the floor? And I'm like, shh, go away. I'm fixing the Skype. And it just finally, and I just didn't, I finally texted her. I'm like, Skype not working. Life, you know, is sucksors. Well, sorry. And so I went up and I did the reading. And then for the Q&A, I actually just, the glory of the iPhone, I actually just took my phone and actually just plugged it into the PA for the house and then called her in and put her on speaker. And so Lisa was actually able to, it was sort of like having the, like a weird, like Charlie's Angels meets God voice coming out of the heavens. So Lisa was actually able to talk to people and do a little Q&A with the crowd via the PA from my iPhone. So, and she was like, and I got to put this up, Cheryl, I'm going to send you something. In fact, I'm going to show this to you, Don. I'm going to send this to you. Lisa actually sent. She sent us during the reading, and I didn't get a chance to post it. She sent like the single most adorable photo that I think has ever been taken by anyone ever under any circumstance. So I'm going to I'll get this posted so everybody can see it. But it's Lisa in front of her webcam last night during the reading, holding a sign that says "I Heart Portland." And then looking, as she always does, like a camp counselor that's teaching you how to make lanyards and going kayaking. Anyway, so we did the Q&A with Lisa, and then we took questions from the audience. By the way, the first question for Lisa, this guy in the audience, how do you fit in that tiny box? So there you go, our people. And then we did the signing, which is so that was and then we did an introduction. Everybody was there. We introduced you know, Cheryl, and you know, because a lot of people, you know, she's helped. Not only is she largely responsible for the existence of the book, but she also has helped like every single member of this audience like at least 4 times with something. You know, where it's like, well, Rick doesn't answer my email when I ask him how to do this thing with the archives. And she's like, I know, he's a jackass. Here's how you do it. So they, you know, so Cheryl was there, and, you know, and then we introduced, Lara, and then Roger Bridges, who did the cover art, and then Todd the Corpse Workoven, who was there. And Todd, who was, and so then Todd and I sat at the table, you know, and, people, you know, we did the actual signing for people. And I'll just read this one. And by the way, somebody gave me, can I show you the Sharpie that somebody gave me? Let me show you this. Here's the thing. You think you've seen, because we sat down at the table, and it's like they, you know, it's like you have the Sharpies, and you're sitting there, and people come up, and you say, to whom am I making this out, sir? And they say, it's to me, or it's to my cousin Jerry, or it's to my deadbeat brother Ted. And you say, okay, and then you write it in. So Todd had, like, the regular Sharpies. I had my clickable Sharpies, which are, you know, the clickable Sharpie is a thing that Todd, he actually had never seen these before, and had not heard us mention this. And so as we got ready to sign, he like uncaps his regular Sharpie, and I just said, okay, I'm all ready. And he said, is that a clickable Sharpie? And I said, yes. And I was like dangling in front of him, and I was toying with him, and I said, yes, it is, and you can't have it. And then, okay, I want you to close your eyes, Don, and I'm going to put something in your hand.
Oh, again?
All right, here we go, put your hand.
All right, okay.
Look at that.
Ooh, it's long and smooth. Ooh. Oh, my.
It's a metal Sharpie.
A metal Sharpie.
How? And write something with that. You should give yourself, just write a little something. Isn't that great?
I love being a Sharpie.
That's a fine Sharpie is what that is.
Oh, and it is. It's chrome. It's polished. It's brushed chrome.
It's beautiful. It's the best thing I've ever owned.
Wow.
And anyway, so then Todd and I are just sitting there, and it's like, then you realize, I mean, It's, I'm not, like, in no world, in no universe would I ever say that it's, like, that it's hard or like, taxing or real work in any way, you know, to sit there and, like, sign your name and then something else. Because it's that thing, well, it's like, you know, when people come by to visit the studio occasionally and they'll say, hey, Rick Dawn, I love the show. By the way, I brought you gifts. And, like, we always immediately feel guilty because we're like, you know, you're all, first of all, you're, like, paying us to listen. And, like, we just sit here and just jaw like idiots. And so there, as the line was going on, it was, you know, and, I mean, we were there for a substantial period of time. And as people were getting up, they were like, oh, we just want to thank you guys for sitting here and just, you know, waiting for me to get up here, you know. And I'm like, my ass is in a chair. I'm just sitting here.
Thank you for allowing me to stand in line for 40 minutes.
I mean, and I don't say that to be, it's like, I say that to, like, underscore just the absurdity, because Todd and I would just look at each other and go, like, you know, we're just sitting here signing our names. Like, you're the one, like, you actually came here and bought the thing and are standing in line. So, like, we thank you. But, like, I realized, do you do this? And I don't very often at all. But where you so totally overshoot your caffeine reuptake window, and it very, very rarely happens to me because my brain shuts off. And it was like there was just so much adrenaline. And you know how it is. Like, if you're going to be on stage, and I don't really get stage fright as such, but you get the adrenaline and the nerves and whatever. And so sometimes that will mask the fact that you are, like, past, you're in the red zone for getting more caffeine into your system. And I didn't realize it until we were sitting there at the table and we're signing the books last night. And I realized at a certain point that Todd finally noted that three books in a row I had gotten, because I would sign them and I would date them. Three books in a row I had gotten the year wrong. I was signing the books as 2012 because I was writing 5/11/2012. And I think Todd thought it was some sort of a gag, and he finally noted that I was just signing all of the books like a year into the future. So that is when I had to stop and get some to get some caffeine.
Well, maybe you know something about the zombie apocalypse that you know, you haven't quite shared.
But we have this. So this, somebody says, this is actually from listener Rick, who was actually just in the studio the other day. He says, great job last night. I'd like to especially thank Todd the Corpse Workhoven for the beautiful inscription in my copy of Zombie Economics regarding a guy in line, quote, totally adjusting his junk, end quote. Your words move me, sir. So I have no idea really what Todd was writing in it, because the
guy behind you is totally adjusting his junk. Well, side Todd.
Well, because the deal is that it was a single file line, and people would hand me to speed the, you know, people would hand me the book, and then I would sign, and then I would hand it to Todd, and he would do the second signature for that while I was doing, like, the first signature for the next person in line. So we, you know, to minimize the time everybody had to wait on our lame asses. And so as a result, I never saw it, any of the stuff that Todd wrote. And so, but you know, but he's, you know, but Todd is hilarious, and, you know, like an actual writer and stuff. And you know, he doesn't just play one on the radio. And meanwhile, I'm just sitting there, just, you know, just like not even able to remember what year it is. And I swear to God, at one point, just forgetting like how to spell my own name, I just went R. And then I froze for a second, and then I would have to have people, like, you know, just walk me through, okay, who do I make this out to? Dan. And I would go, and how do you spell that? And then I would just stop, and I would just go, I'm sorry. Fortunately, though, there's a coffee shop, like, right there, and I was able to get some caffeine, and then it was all...
Yeah, that is one of the good things about the Barnes & Noble now. It's like, here's your Starbucks. I was just because, you know, my whole life is all about me. I was very heartened. I think it was Tom Sutton said on Facebook that at some point, you know, you explained, you know, I wasn't there because I wasn't feeling well. He said there was a collective from the audience.
There was. No, there was. There was a.
That's nice that they care.
No, the audience, the people, they asked after you as they do. Joe Squires was there, of course, I want to thank. So real quickly, and then we'll kind of get off this and get to the actual.
And apparently,
story.
No one was shot.
No one was shot in the head or anywhere else. Before we get into the actual show content today, because we got Penis Watch today, Cannibal Watch, Big Jim Willig in the studio with another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101. We'll do Rodney Dangerfield today. He's going to be the subject of our observations. So I want to thank, first of all, Steve, who is the manager of Barnes & Noble, and it turns out a longtime listener, which I did not know. So first of all, did you ever see, you didn't see it in person, you just saw it online, the actual, like, the sign out front that said, Thursday, May 12th, you know, Portland's Rick Emerson signing books. Like, you saw the picture of the on Facebook.
Yeah, and the thing that Siegfried did with the display right by the Christian section.
So there's the sign out front, which is on Facebook, and then there was this thing that Siegfried took the photo of, it, which is me by the Christian section. So when I stopped in yesterday just to check the Wi-Fi, there had actually then been placed in the window an even larger, like a vinyl banner with my head, I swear to God, like 3 feet high. And it just says in massive letters, Rick Emerson. And we've
got small space in here.
Okay, so here's the thing. So then I go in just to make sure that the Wi-Fi and everything is working. And I talk to the manager, Steve. And I said, my name is Rick and I wrote this book and I'm going to be doing this thing and whatever. And he was walking me through the Wi-Fi and where I was going to be standing and where the podium was and how everything was going to work. And then he did that thing of like going, and best show ever, you know, and it was, which is where you do get that sort of, and it is like a weird sort of, you know, like
a secret handshake.
Hello, Mr. Durden. Sort of a, you know, kind of a thing. And he goes, and this, by the way, and I told this story last night, but I don't know. It's where you realize that people, I'm not even saying it's a false impression, but you do understand exactly how you are perceived or what people believe you're, how people believe you to view yourself. Because he said, and by the way, after the reading, you can totally take that vinyl banner home and hang it in your bathroom. Like, that was my whole life's goal. Like, that was the whole point of writing the book, was just to get a huge banner of myself that I can hang in my living room.
I know you want that.
But, you know, but then I thought, but then I literally did spend about a year and a half working in an office where there was a huge photograph of my own face on the wall. So, by definition, that means I can't do it again. Because if twice I deliberately am in a place where there's a huge picture of my own, then that's like a pathology.
Does it say Barnes & Noble on it? Or is it just the book and the thing?
I think it's a huge, huge vinyl, and it's a high quality with like the metal, the riveted corners that you can hang. I think it is a huge vinyl banner version, basically, of that sign that we had the photo that was out front.
Oh, okay.
I think where it's my face, the book, and it says, reading, signing, May 12th. Why? Just what were you?
I was thinking that we could bring it and we could hang it on the wall at Wonder Northwest by our booth.
Well, we could just, you know,
we could fold it up underneath.
We could just put a potted plant in front of part of it. So
we could just get one of those things like in cartoons that says "sold out" over the front of that part.
Exactly. So we want to thank a listener, Steve, also manager Steve at Barnes & Noble, and Joe Squires, who came out, and our friends Bridget and Sarah, and Sarah Dillon and Greg Nibbler, and Mike Chase, who was there, David Walker, who was there.
Stephanie Strickland there?
Stephanie Strickland may or may not have been there.
I just wanted to mention, I thought this was hilarious. I hadn't seen this until last night. After you were on KGW, the In the Square thing with her, I saw last night she had tweeted right before you went on the air. She tweeted, about to interview Rick Emerson on the Square, trying not to go all fangirly.
Really?
Yeah.
Confidential to Portland. Stephanie Strickland doesn't know I'm just a big retard. No one tell her.
Apparently, Stephanie Strickland all fangirly for Rick Emerson.
Well, that was before
Portland's Rick Emerson,
and that was really before she had any extended exposure to me.
Before your 90 seconds of glory, and then she went, you made the most of that.
Really, a babbling idiot, isn't he? I don't know because it's a. Here's the other thing: is like when you're doing the signing part, it's. Todd and I realized at one point that we had no idea how long the line was because you just see it single file. I mean, it just sort of snakes back, and we just had no, and so there was no, you get no sense of rapport. But so it is with the reading, because after a certain point, you can't, it's just like the tops of heads. So I've heard from actually a lot of people who said they were there, and it's like, I didn't see them. I had no idea where they were down there. I heard. And also, here's the other group of people I want to thank. Not only do I want to thank everybody who, like, obviously stood in line for, I mean, at one point, literally, I mean, the last person in line, who was our girlfriend Scarpelli, who many of you know from Facebook, you've seen her all over the Intertron. She was the absolute. She announced herself really proudly. She was sort of happy. She was like, "I am the last in line." I'm sorry. She was the last in line. She was in line for. Well, it would have been I think was in line as the last person in line. I think she was in line for 2 hours and. 10 minutes, something like that.
Wow.
I mean, it was long. I mean, we were there.
We were there.
We were there, and it's ridiculous. It doesn't make any sense. It's stupid.
This is you.
I'm just some guy with a pen, and I can't even use it to get the year right.
You can't even write your name.
But Todd was apparently hilarious with his inscription, so that makes up for it. But no, we were there for an hour after the mall closed. I mean, like, we were there. I mean, we started at 7, and then the signing started at, like, 7:45, and we didn't finish until 10. And it was, so I want to thank, I mean, so that really is when we say, like, best audience ever. And Todd actually sent me a really great email last night that, he said Todd's, you know, started out as a listener and then has done a lot of things with the show over the years. And obviously, you know, is now one of the writers of Zombie Economics. But he actually said that last night was a sort of interesting thing for him because last night one of the first times he sort of had the opportunity to see the best audience ever, like from the perspective that we see it from.
Yeah.
And he really did, you know, get a sense of like how great, I mean, so as much as I sort of, you know, being kind of flip about it, I mean, the idea that somebody would like stand for 2 hours, you know, there really are as corny as it sounds, there really are no words. So thank you to everybody who came out and everybody who was there. It really was, it was quite something. It was incredible. And a lot of our hardcore P1s were there. Our friend Kara was not able to be there. She was, she had your same virus, like your same death flu thing. So she wouldn't be able to be there. But, Jenny and her husband were there. And Tom was there. And John and Kathy were there. And it's just, you know, just the people who've barely been there, you know, the hardcore listeners who've been there, you know, through thick and thin. Keelan was there. And I do, final note, swear to God, final thing, and then we'll start the actual news. And this is like the last day you'll have to hear me drone on about the goddamn book. Unless I'm mentioning that time that we were talked about on Forbes.com. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. And Reader's Digest.
Reader's Digest.
Seriously. The Reader's Digest thing. Never mind. I don't even want to get off into a hole. Somebody sent me a scan, a PDF, like a scan of the actual page from Reader's Digest on which my name appears. And the thing is, Lara's parents are going to be so happy. Parents and my mom probably will be like over the moon. My boy's name appeared in Reader's Digest. I mean, like, I think I have officially, like, won over my in-laws, like, forever.
Now they get it.
Forever. like, that is a thing that now it all makes sense.
They'll be walking around in Utah going, did you see the latest Reader's Digest?
Yeah, they're not going to care about the Forbes thing. Reader's Digest? Yes. Final comment, and Mike Russell was there, and again, you know, Mike Russell and his lovely wife, the Mike Russell, who a lot of you guys know from Court and Bobby, he's been on this show. He does Culture Pulp. He's written and made with the illustrating for the Oregonian for a long time. He had a signing with David Walker a few weeks back at Bridge City Comics. You know, Mike is a really great guy and a really smart guy, and he also was one of the very last people, and I think he was actually deferring to, like, you know, sort of, you know, the, you know, people, you know, just, you know, people were there because they had to get the book, get done, get signed, get out, and I think he sort of knew he had some time to linger, so he was kind of just deferring and letting other people go ahead, and so he was one of the very last people, and he actually bought a copy of it for, I think, his cousin, who is getting ready to graduate from college or whatever, and he, you know, he was having this, like, write a thing to his cousin, and he said something, and I don't think he kind of realized the implications of what he was saying, and there is a reason I'm bringing this up, because it has to do with, like, the fact that we're doing the show and the fact that, you know, that we did Legion of News on Cascadia.fm, where he, you know, he said, well, can he should, you know, so, like, you know, he said, you know, here's, you know, there's a book I'm getting for my cousin, you know, and her name is whatever, and Stephanie, and I said, thanks so much for tweeting about the event, because he put up a couple things on Twitter and Facebook, and he said, hey, Rick Emerson's going to be signing the book, everybody go out. He put up a post on Twitter that was very, very great and encouraged a lot of people to come out, and I said, by the way, thank you guys so much for tweeting about the event and Facebooking. I said, thanks for, you know, really getting the word out about it. And he kind of waved a hand to the room, and he goes, well, you didn't need it, man. I mean, look at the huge turnout. And I said, you're not looking at it the right way. Like, the huge turnout is because everybody was so supportive and was so great. And I mean, it's, and I really do mean that. It's, it is, It is really genuinely sweet and wonderful. It's sort of like this self, it's like this teepee almost, this self-sustaining tent where it's like the community, and that's not just us. It's us and Court and Bobby and Cascadia and Walker and Mike Russell and Sarah and Greg. It's everybody. It is really, and the audience, I mean, who are all, because, and the other thing is like all of us, we've reached this point now, it's weird, where all of us are simultaneously doing our own thing, but we're also all members of the audience for all the other things.
Yeah.
You know, like I am, you know, like we're the audience for Court and Bobby and Greg and Sarah, you know, and I dig Mike Russell stuff, and he's part of the audience for us. And it is this great self-sustaining thing. So when he said, like, you didn't need us to promote it, look at all these people, I'm like, these people are here, you know, hey, you know, not that like I'm an unknown commodity in Portland. But it is because of this really insanely strong, interwoven, interconnected community. And it really is, it was legitimately really great and wonderful and a perfect illustration of something that I think we're all aware of, but I think sometimes you just, not that you take it for granted, you just don't stop sometimes to step back and realize, like, how tightly knit and huge, though. I mean, it is a huge, tightly knit community, which doesn't happen all that often. Usually, a tightly knit group of a community is small, and this is. I mean, it's, you know, it really is. It is something quite astounding. It's.
Well, my husband Patrick has mentioned this a few times. Something will happen where, like, I'll be doing something with Eric Snyder, or I'll see Mike Russell, or we'll talk to David Walker or something, and Patrick will go, and he said this just last night. He said, "We are so lucky to know the people we know."
Seriously.
You know?
I mean, yeah, I can't even, I mean, you know, a ton of people online last night were talking about they go, "Oh, that trailer you made." And I was like, I'm not even in the trailer. I stood and I watched while talented people that were gracious enough to work for Beer, Scott Daly, and Sarah and Greg and Siegfried and Kelsey, they just did it. And also because they're like freakishly talented. So, you know, it's. Somebody, the publisher actually asked me, "Go, well, what agency made that spot for you?" And I'm like, "The Siegfried Agency."
The guys who work for Beer Agency.
Seriously, it really. But anyway, so Russell said, and I said, "No, you know, it's really because, you know, you guys and the community getting the word out." And he actually said, "That's a conversation." He said, "That's a long conversation we should have, at a later time," because he obviously has a lot of thoughts on that as well. So anyway, so. In conclusion, thank you all for coming out. It was great and amazing and really just a once in a lifetime thing. So thank you to everybody for making that possible and for all that. So on that note, well, should we just break and have Jim come
yes.
in and we'll do the thing, because I know you you're clackety clacking away and you're going to send some email and stuff. We
yes.
got to get out during the break.
I also need to
use the ladies' room.
Be ill.
The
yes.
facilities. All right, hold on a second. Wait, we'll do the. All right, after this. All right, State of the Rick Emerson Show returns in just moments with Big Jim Willig and Don Taylor at the news desk and another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101. That is all on the way, so don't go anywhere. We will be back after this. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Baby, I don't care, long as I stay tough. still struck by stuff. Step on out, man, and stretch your stuff.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Must be fake. My lip starts to shake. How does she know who I am? And why does she give a damn about?
I've got 2 tickets to Iron Maiden.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program, home of the world's finest bumper music. It is 503-505-6964. It's 503-505-6964. Thank you for joining us on this Friday, May 13th, 2011. Still to come, we got your Penis Watch, Cannibal Watch, and another installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101, brought to you by a man who, by the way, caught not just the Friday the 13th reference, but also caught what other reference, Big Jim Willig?
That would be the Ferris Bueller's Day Off 9 times. I don't remember him being shot 9 times. Probably because he wasn't sick. He was skipping school. Wake up and smell the coffee, Mrs. Bueller. It's a fool's paradise. He's just leading you down the primrose path.
Well done, sir.
Thank you. I wore that movie out from my local video rental store to the point where I came in one day just to sort of rent it like I had done for countless weekends beforehand. And the woman behind the counter was like, dude, you're the only one that rents this movie. Because anybody else that comes in is always has to deal with the fact that it's rented out. And it's probably warped now, so you've paid for it about 9 times over. We can't take your money anymore. You just have it.
Really?
Yeah, so she gave me that. And then a couple of months later, she gave me Top Secret. So I got both of those rather well-worn-out copies.
Top Secret?
Not Top Secret. It was Real Genius. It was the other Val Kilmer good comedy. But, I paid about $50 for very worn-out copies on VHS, no less.
Well, because you remember, this is the thing that I think not only the kids today not remember, they never even knew.
No.
They never had to deal with this at all. And I only had to deal with this for maybe the first few years of my video buying a life, because then they transitioned to the pre-watched video. Do you remember when VHS tapes first came out and it was like, for only $89, you can own Die Hard? I mean, what the hell is that? I mean, seriously, if anybody wonders why people dislike the entertainment industry so much, for all they give us, they take back like tenfold. $89, and I'm not kidding. Like when you buying a new VHS of a current film when it came out on the market, they were $70, $75, $80 if you wanted to get. And Die Hard is the example because there's a friend of mine, same thing. His dad rented Die Hard like every weekend. It was their favorite movie at that house. Dad just loved
it's
Die Hard.
It's a good Christmas movie, I feel.
It's my favorite Christmas movie. But the dad rented Die Hard all the time, and so they actually got it for him for like his birthday or something. But it was so expensive that it was like that and like a packet of peanuts. Like it was that, like, have that and a beer. Here you go.
Because hey, smoke up, Johnny.
So freaking expensive. But that was before the advent of the pre-watched, the previewed video cassettes, which really were a lifesaver.
It was like buying, to me, it always felt like buying bowling shoes.
Used rubbers.
Yeah. Like it was just like, but you were just so excited to actually physically own a copy of it.
So it wasn't like a bad, like a dubbed version.
Yeah.
Where you were like spent all weekend with the two VCRs wired together. One of them like in the big plastic casing from the store. So you
spitting out sparks.
Exactly. And then you're like, okay, all hit record, you hit play. Now, it's goddamn Macrovision. I remember going to like Goodwill and trying to find a VCR old enough that it wouldn't have the macro chip in it so that it wouldn't thwart the recording.
My dad somewhere, I don't know if it was the black market, but he found a dual player VCR. This thing was about as big as like
it was like a double deck cassette deck.
Yeah, and there was like you put the blank in the one, you put the master in the other, and then you just hit dub tape, and you could just crank them out.
Those were made, unsurprisingly, not just made, but I mean sold in Japan. Those were a Japanese product that occasionally would find their way over here. Not unlike happens now with like different region-friendly DVD players.
Yeah.
Where it'll be like, we'll play all regions of movies. That happens now that happened then with those, where it's like you could occasionally go to a store, or if like you were in, somebody was going to like New York, where they have a lot of sort of gray market off-market.
Bought it off a blanket on 24th Street.
Exactly. And that was gold, because then it's like you were just, no longer will I be at the mercy of, just in only 2 hours, I will have a perfect copy of something
Willow.
That now takes you 4 seconds to copy or download. And it's 3 gigs. I'll have that in 5 minutes. Come back. And this is all true. Let's, before we do anything else, because I so enjoy things like this, let's quickly go around the room and talk about the movie or movies which you compulsively rented on VHS. Don Taylor in the back.
Oh, wow.
Because everybody had like a movie that they just rented like every week.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe Pulp Fiction. I know I watched Pulp Fiction over and over again on video.
On video?
Well, like I guess maybe that video? would have been DVD. I'm trying to think back to video. Because, see, I'm the thing is I was a... I don't know if I rented things over and over again. That's the problem. I was kind of crazy because I thought... I wanted to own every movie like ever.
Yeah.
So and cable was this like brand new exciting thing. So I recorded like everything liked ever.
Yeah.
Off of all of these obscure movie channels and stuff too. So it's like because you know what could possibly go wrong? It's like I'm going to have these VHS tapes of these movies forever.
Well, you probably still like in your basement somewhere. You've got like a thing, and on the side it says,
propping up a water heater.
I think when we moved
European vacation.
I think a couple of years ago when we moved out of the house and we were moving into the apartment and we just started purging ourselves of everything we didn't need. I finally just went, okay, the big box of home taped movies has got to go.
And it's like, and you can look at the hand. Here's the thing: like I have somewhere in the basement movies that either I haven't gotten around to throwing out, or that I. And I have done this little by little. I am slowly digitizing a lot of things. Like my old, like I have one or two, audios like mixtapes that I wanted to preserve because they were either like really great or they were just from like some particular time or like from that special someone or whatever. And it's just like stuff like or just like crap that you can't find anymore. And it's like I don't want to. And so there's like in a box along with like VHS things that are out of print. And it's like, when are you ever going to listen to that stuff or watch it? Probably never. But it's like, at the same time, you know that, like,
it's your whoobie. You don't want to get rid of it. You can't just throw that in the fireplace.
Yeah, it's like, you're like, well, but if I decide that I want to watch this, it's not going to be here, you know, and then I'll kick myself. So it's like, slowly I'm digitizing that stuff. But I have a couple of videotapes.
Like a certain Star Trek video.
That, which, you know, if only I could find it. I'm making inroads, though. I'm looking into it.
See, bounty hunters need work, dude. It is a rough market out there right now.
I have this big box of videotapes in the basement that's like, you look at it and you can, it's like, it sort of is like, it's like counting archaeological, like, it's like rock layers or something. Because by the handwriting, I can tell, like, who I was dating at the time. Because, like, a lot, like, there's this whole section of videotapes where everything is written in, like, a series of pastel markers with swirly handwriting. And it's all stuff, and it, you know,
Brenda
and it's
Tiziotti.
No, and it's all stuff like, it's all stuff like Dream a Little Dream.
You know? And, God.
But it's on the same tape as, like, it's on the same tape, in my own defense, it's on the same tape as, like, Duckman Season 2. And so it's like, I can't.
And Faces of Death.
Yeah, I mean, I can't, you know, Barry Manilow, Live by Request. I can't get rid of that. You know, and then just, like, things that, you know, and then stuff that I'm glad that I held on to because it wasn't available for a long time. I had for years, and I think it's now obviated, but for years, I had a pristine copy of Pearl Jam's MTV Unplugged,
ooh,
which was not available. You couldn't buy it. You couldn't get it. You could get it bootlegged, and that was it.
Yeah.
But I actually had that from the record company. Epic Records, I think it's Epic. Epic Records sent me. And this wasn't like taped off the television or anything. I mean, this was like from Epic Records themselves. Epic Records and MTV sent out promotional copies of the entire Pearl Jam Unplugged performance with, I think, like a couple of bonus tracks on VHS. And I'm not like a massive Pearl Jam fan. I'm a mid-sized Pearl Jam fan, but I kept that. And then over the years, that became a thing that I was more and more glad that I had kept, because I think until last year, it was never reissued. You couldn't get it anywhere. And it was sort of like this whole – and not only did I have a copy of it, I had one of the only copies probably around in the country at that time.
Seriously.
That was from the record company and therefore was of pristine quality and had no commercials, had nothing in it. So that's why I'm reluctant to throw stuff away that if I don't know that I can get a copy of it somewhere else.
Yeah, I've got a couple of VHS tapes at home that I need to like get burned to DVD or something because they're episodes of the cable access comedy show that I did back in the day. And
what was yours called?
It was called Running with Scissors.
Nice.
Actually, no, Running with Scissors was the one we were going to do here in Portland. I was going to do with Dave Helfrey. I'm sorry. Ours was called Rockets to Paradise. And every episode started with us showing like the title card for Rockets to Paradise, which was this guy in a spacesuit standing next to a spaceship. And then the announcer would say that Rockets to Paradise would not be seen this week, but instead we were bringing you this special presentation. And then we would just do all our other stuff. But,
awesome. I did a short-lived version of a public access comedy-based show called The Ha. And that one can stay buried. That one can live in the ether warm and, watched by no one.
The one I really want, I don't really care about the sketch stuff because most of it wasn't that good. Although there was one, I did a parody feminine hygiene commercial that I wrote and directed. And I'd really like to see that again. But
now in habanero flavor.
Well, it was for musk scented for when, you know, you feel too fresh.
You need to sort of...
Yeah, but because sometimes you just feel a little too fresh.
You hear the look on Rick's face right now? Can you hear it?
I'm experiencing fear.
But the one I actually want was the episode, the hour special we did, which was me doing color commentary at the Hollywood Christmas Parade.
Right on.
And we got a camera and I got the mic and I was just standing on the sidewalk at the Hollywood Christmas Parade and like just commenting on crap as it was walking by. And the funny thing was, it's like you'd get celebrities actually waving at us because they don't know that we're not like a real TV show. And I'm just standing there and I'm like going, oh, there's Mrs. Cunningham from Happy Days. She doesn't know we're not a real TV show.
Fantastic. Awesome.
A friend of mine had a very impressive VHS collection. And we used to go over there, and I'd love to just sort of, wander through the walls and walls of tapes. And I wonder where he got them from. And I've realized that his dad had HBO and Cinemax and Prism and all those other like pay channels.
Recorded things constantly.
Oh yeah. And so my mom, following suit once we got cable, was like, "Oh, there's a free weekend coming up." So she'd go to the store and just
free
stock
weekend.
Up.
You buy videotape, you rent the VCR if you don't own one, and then you tape the entire stuff you don't even care about.
Yeah, like Turner and Hooch, and every 3 seconds it's like free Stars Weekend at the bottom of the screen.
That's like that copy of Chasing Amy I have that at the bottom says, "This is a screener copy provided to Blockbuster and may be revoked at any time." And it's like, I don't even know where I got that, but it's like, yeah, no, I the free screener weekend, I totally remember that.
Love it.
The you know, and the things I remember renting just a couple of things over and over. One was this was actually on DVD. When we first sort of transitioned to society to DVD, I rented Boogie Nights constantly, and so that was like a thing that my my wife finally just she finally just bought it. It was the same thing. It was like I had rented it so many dozens of times,
yeah,
because it is it's one of my all time favorite films. But on VHS. When I was in high school, I rented the movie Crossroads with Ralph Macchio.
Oh yeah,
very frequently,
yeah.
Which I love to this day.
Blues guitars. Deal with the Devil.
I am a huge fan of that movie, and there are a handful, and really only a handful of elements of that movie that have not aged well. But certainly no fooling. There are very few things about that movie that. In other words, anything you don't like about the movie now was already that way in like 1986 or whatever. The only thing that is really not aged all that well is the it's not even a special effect, but it's at the end. And so it's this sort of great, and of course, like all white suburban youth, I fancied myself a blues man.
That's where it comes from,
of course. Which is great because like the Joe Seneca character actually says at one point to Ralph Macchio, he goes, because Ralph Macchio is the same thing. He's like this, he's just like this white dork, who is talented at guitar, but fancies himself a blues man. And they do note that it's like ridiculous because Joe Seneca goes, where are you from? And he goes, Long Island? He goes, Long Island, famous breeding ground for blues men, ain't it? And it's like just this like excoriating, tell me how you come to doing time on the pea farm, Long Island. It's so great. But I was like, I was a huge Zeppelin fan. Yeah. And then because of Zeppelin, I like, you did that thing of like working backward with Zeppelin to, and there's no shame in this, but I worked backward from Zeppelin to the Rolling Stones, to the Yardbirds, to, the Howlin' Wolf and to Muddy Waters and to Robert Johnson and Son House and like all, it was like, well, I dig these guys, like who were they into? And I dig that guy, who did he listen to? And, but Crossroads is this, it's actually a pretty great film. It's Walter Hill directed it, and it's Rob Macchio, Joe Seneca, and Jamie Gertz, and Steve Vai.
Oh yeah,
and but it is about it is the tale of Joe Seneca who following the famous legend from the Robert Johnson song, sold his soul, and they have to engage in a duel at the end. He travels to the South to win his soul back, and there's actually one other really dated moment. And the other dated moment is, and it I wish if I had the money, if I was vastly wealthy, I would actually buy that film just so I could CGI this one scene out of existence and just fix the movie. Because there's a bookending scene. There's a scene where the Joe Seneca character, Willie, is a young man, and he's standing at at the crossroads like you do. And it's all sepia toned. And then this sort of great, like the Tin Lizzy Model T sort of rolls up, and it's and inside is the devil, who is this like impeccably dressed, very like stylish, dapper black man with like the Mississippi string tie and everything. Yeah. And he just looks badass. It's like exactly the way the devil ought to look. and so he makes the deal with the devil. and presumably because that is the glamorous car of its time. It's like, he has a Model T. He's really, he's and look at the way he's dressed and with the tie and so forth. And then in the modern day when he travels back with Ralph Macchio, like again, as you do in the South, he is waiting again for they wait for the devil to appear so he can barter for his soul.
The minivan of fate.
I swear to God, it's a Trans Am. It's like the Knight Rider. Because in 1986, like that's how you rolled.
Yeah.
That is the one thing about that movie that jags. You look at it and you just go, oh, really? The only other moment in that film that isn't very good, and when I say not very good, it's just that you can it takes you out of the film for a second. At the end, because the music for Crossroads, by the way, is impeccable.
Absolutely.
Even now, because it was all done by Ry Cooder. And if anybody is familiar with Ry Cooder is a legendary performer of what I guess now we call Americana, or roots music. But it's all that stuff you hear on NPR on Sunday afternoon when you are a white person sitting at home making pasta and you want to feel authentic. You put on NPR and they go, "Today on American Roots, we hear slide bottleneck guitar from Maestro Ry Cooder with his interpretation of the Sun House classic, Sun Going Down." That is from his session at the Delta Studios, 1996. And it's like, you know, but it's all really, really good. And then for the guitar duel at the end, all of the guitar duel is performed by Steve Vai, who, even though it's 1996, he's not all glammed up. He just looks like a badass. He's just this guy with this long jet black hair who looks like Satan, like he actually does. But the one moment that you go like, 1986, is when he and Macchio, who actually plays a lot of his own guitar in the film, there's this sequence where Macchio is playing a Mozart composition on the electric guitar. And that actually sounds really great. And it, because Steve Vai is, you know, a brilliant guitarist, but they do that jazz of like filming it slow and then speeding it up so it looks like because Macchio is actually playing the part. He's playing the Mozart on the guitar,
yeah.
But you can tell he's playing it at like a third of the speed because it's, you know, like impossible.
Yeah.
So Vai obviously taught him enough to be able to fake the guitar, you know, to play it slowly, and then they went, no, we'll just play it back faster. So it's like he's doing the jittery Keystone Cops thing on the guitar. So that's a little awkward. This is like the second week in a row we're talking about guitar nerd stuff. Last week it was Sabotage. Now it's Steve Vai.
Well, you know.
Next week, all Satriani and Malmsteen. But I rented Crossroads like all the freaking time. And so like the day that came out on DVD, you know, at a price I could afford, that was like the happiest day of my life. That was a good time.
See, for me, it was the VHS that I wanted to harbor the most, but vanished rather quickly, was Sleepaway Camp Part 2.
Dude!
Yes. And the problem was, I found it, because the first one, obviously, very very memorable cover with the tennis shoe with the knife through it, and like the dear mom, kind of like, it starts off like a letter home from camp, and then it slowly starts to like work in that people are disappearing and dying in horrible ways. But the second one, I felt, was always the best, because the cover had like all these big names that you had to like sort of flip over to realize that they were like relatives of these celebrities, like Springsteen, Pamela Springsteen, Estefez, like Renee Estefez. And I had worn that out, and before I had a chance to buy it, it just sort of vanished. And then I was working at a Tower Records doing loss prevention, and they were re-releasing it on DVD. So they had like the first three on the special edition DVD box sets, and they were sent to the store as promos. And the boss is like, anybody like the like summer slasher kind of movies? And my ears kind of pricked up. I'm like, which one? He's like, Sleepaway. I'm like, give me now.
Awesome.
Like, I almost tackled him to the ground.
Sleepaway Camp is a movie that I have not thought about for quite some time, or much less Sleepaway Camp 2.
Yes.
So there was a time when it's like on Friday and Saturday, that was like the whole deal, is he would rent like seven bad slasher films. You know, like Nail Gun Massacre and Slumber Party Massacre. I'll also take Pieces. And let's see, do you have Critters 2? Not one. Critters 2.
Yes.
April Fool's Day. How about that? And what about...
Ghoulies Go to College.
Shopping Mall. Yeah, I mean, it was...
Hunting Humans.
The 80s were really a glorious time for the bad horror film.
Oh, yes.
Because it's like those exist now, and I just don't know... I don't know if they're seen to the extent that they were then. I mean, because as hard as it was to get people to watch them then, now it's like I think you're just awash in option. Terrible movies are easy to come by now because, like, the internet is just – it's nothing but terrible movies. And so I feel a little nostalgic. This is a thing that we've actually talked about several times with David Walker. He's I will have to say that I don't really hold you know – what I'm trying to say here. All the various incarnations of this show in terms of like who's, you know, who's doing the news or who's, you know, who's sitting opposite me at any point, you know, they all have like the sort of areas of expertise where they can talk or things on which they can, you know, opine or area, you know, subjects on which they can ruminate. One of the things that really that within, you know, just like just this sort of like the me, Don, David Walker the trifecta. That's a thing that really we can just spend like hours on, is talking about the culture of the video store. Because, like, for example, like Sarah is just young enough that she doesn't, you know, she was there as it was sort of transitioning. When she was sort of at that age of, you know, just like renting a lot of movies, it was, we were transitioning into DVD. So she doesn't really have a lot of those like dusty beaded curtain memories of the great terrible VHS store. Tim did. Sarah didn't really. But it's like Walker and Don and I, it's like, we, it's for hours I can talk about the loss of a certain slice of American culture, which was the sort of beaten down, off-brand video rental store, which was a glorious, sort of horrible but wonderful thing in America.
It very much was a video or a visual version of vinyl versus DVD.
Totally.
Like, where DVD was like spotless and clean and made it look really, really shiny. But with the VHS, there were little like imperfections in, you know, how it was presented, and that made it that much more.
And just the stores themselves were just, you know, there was something about wandering the aisles, and it's like you see a bunch of, you know, VHS boxes, which are like mini promotional posters, basically. Yeah. And sometimes it's like, it was like video games in the 80s. The box cover has like no, there's nothing, no comparison with what's in, has no relation to what's in the movie itself. They just needed to catch your eye.
Yeah.
And then you'd see like the faded posters on the wall of like some terrible film, and the guy like hung it up with like push pins, and it's just stayed there for 10 years. You know, and
it's
the carpet's
sun faded.
Yeah, totally. Half of it is sun faded because the awning out front blocks the other half. And the carpet's all worn through, and it's like there was just a certain, it's like I think what it is, and I don't think this is not just nostalgia, because I would say that the same thing is true. It is just, it was the filmic equivalent of the old, and when I say old, I don't mean like old like from when I was a kid. I mean like has a feel to it, like record stores.
Yeah.
And I don't mean, you know, like if you go to a place now that just sells like old dusty vinyl, stores like that just have a certain feel. And not because I grew up with vinyl, just there's a certain kind of guy who runs that store. There's a certain kind of clientele that goes there. There's a certain kind of promotional product they receive from various companies and publishers and that go up on the walls. And that is a thing you just don't have now, because you're not going to the store to get movies. Even when you did, it's like if you started going to Blockbuster, it was just not the same.
It was commercialized and corporate.
It was like, you know what going to Blockbuster was like? Here's the comparison I will make, and this is a very 80s comparison. This is for the people of our generation, our time. This going to Blockbuster was like going to your favorite video game arcade, the one that had like dark black carpet, dark black and orange walls, and was underlit and creepy, and then realizing that sometime over the summer they had renovated it, and it was now a brightly lit with fluorescent lights everywhere and bright, bright carpet, and everything was polished and scrubbed and gleaming, place full of redemption games for girls.
Yeah.
That's what Blockbuster was. It was
like going
to the video game arcade, and it was just a bunch of things where it's like there's a huge domed thing where you put in money to play, to win tickets, to buy stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, and most of it was most of them were plastic bangles.
Well, I'm sterile.
I also have that really bizarre, because my life is strange, the weird thing of my hometown video store was the one that Quentin Tarantino worked in.
No way.
Yeah. It was the Video Archives in Manhattan Beach, California. And so and I remember I've told this story before. When Pulp Fiction came out, I grabbed my best friend. I said, we should go see this movie, Pulp Fiction. It was directed by one of the guys who worked at Video Archives. And Marge said, which one? And I said, the one named Quentin. Because I said, Quentin Tarantino. She said, which one is he? The one named Quentin. And she said, oh, the guy with the big weird head? And I said, yes, he was the one.
Yeah, that head's filled with money now.
But yeah, and that was a great story. It was a little video store in a strip mall. And they had like a big popcorn popping machine, so you get a little free bag of popcorn. But they also, it was known because it had like the best staff picks shelf like ever. Because Tarantino and Roger Avery both worked there. And they were just like, they were vicious about like your choices, and about they would be mean to people. It was like the music store in High Fidelity. They would be mean to people if they rented stuff they thought that they shouldn't be renting.
It's the age old war between the enthusiast and the hobbyist, like people that are genuinely passionate about what it is that they sort of take in, the sort of feed on, versus the people that are just like, this looks good. And like, you have no idea why you're picking that. You will not appreciate the genius that is inherent in that. I should smack you in the face for even thinking about it. Is it a good movie? Yes, it's a good movie. You shouldn't have to ask that question.
It's
give me your keys.
Get
out of my store. Never come back.
Don't make eye contact.
And it's because you feel like it's your duty to try to beat them into having better taste.
Yeah.
You know, and things like that. I went to those video stores where it's like the guy would be like, really? Are you? Don't rent this. Rent this instead. And you'd be like, the thing is, you should listen to that guy because that guy is sometimes wrong, but he's sometimes right, often right. The other thing I remember is that the other enduring memory I have is not just of renting Crosswords over and over again, but of renting Fright Night 2 and then watching it at a friend's house and him swearing that he was going to return it the next day. And then he and his family went to Europe for like 3 weeks or something. They left the country. And so they couldn't be reached. They couldn't be found. They couldn't be contacted. No cell phones or email or anything. And so he finally got back. And I swear to God, he got back. And then he lost it after getting back. And then he found it again. And by the time I took it back, the late fees, which they – and this wasn't like, you know –
this is a statute of limitations.
No. And it was like a serious thing. Like I was like 18 and I'm – you know, I think I had just turned 18 and I was – you know, it's like the permanent record. Yeah. Like I'm 18. They'll put me in prison if I don't pay these.
You got credit? Not anymore.
And now that you mentioned it, I do remember because when you think about – I think I was just thinking of movies in general. Once you started talking about horror, I realized, as far as VHS movies that I rented over and over, not just to watch myself, but also ones that I would compulsively take to other people's houses and say, we are watching this tonight. Two of them in particular were Basket Case.
Yes!
And Phantasm.
Somebody just wrote Basket Case and Mother's Day.
Yeah, I would actually force people to watch Basket Case.
Phantasm.
Like, oh, we're watching that. No, it's awesome. We're watching Basket Case.
It's the second time in less than 24 hours that Phantasm has come up.
The ball is back.
Remember, it's just a dream. It's just a dream. No, it's not.
I will say,
the dwarf is getting goo all over my ice cream.
By the time I finally took that copy of Fright Night 2 back, the late fees incidentally were $142.
Shut
yeah,
up.
Yeah, no, and I paid it. Because it's like, again, I was like, I had just turned 18, and it's like, you know, you're awash with potential, but also, you know, possibilities and promise, but you also think, I'm an adult. I will go to a debtor's jail if I don't pay this. Like, I thought, like,
you shackled to a wall by your wrists?
Well, I just signed a thing saying the government could send me to war. So, you know, it's like, I was afraid to, like, you know, I'm like, I don't want this to follow me my whole life.
Who's the first on the draft list? We'll go with drifters, pedophiles, and guys who haven't paid their late fees for VHS return.
Well, it was like Johnny Fever being afraid of the phone cops, you know. I was just so afraid that, like, the man was gonna, you know. So anyway, so that's that is an era of America and Americana that is not coming back. But why don't we start talking about this?
Yeah.
Oh, it was the Ferris Bueller's.
Oh yeah,
that was
like an hour ago. Jesus. By the way, somebody did note that I was talking about this huge banner of my own face that they had, because the others weren't large enough. The two big signs of my face. That was insufficient. I was so afraid that somebody would see it and, like, think that I had demanded more signage of myself. You know, my face must be larger. It must loom.
You must just blot out
hold on.
The sun.
Don, you've got a little something on your shirt.
Okay, are we going to guess now, what does Don have on her boob?
Ooh.
Is that –
yes.
Going to play that game? Do we
yes,
have music
we
for that?
In fact, let's see. Should we make people actually – should we force people to actually text or call or something with that?
Yeah, call in and
if you can correctly identify. No, but don't call now. Don't. Because how would we? Are we going to give them an X number of guesses?
Uh-huh.
Like, what if a guy just goes liquid?
Well, okay, that's a little too vague. You have to be specific.
Three people
about
have not been
what
in my
it
kitchen.
Is.
Do they get three guesses?
Sure, why not? Three guesses.
All right. So we'll just say this. If we say the first person, we'll give do it once.
Okay.
Because otherwise, then it's a bunch of people listening to other people guess to something that they're not going to do. So,
to make this fair.
What are we giving them?
I don't know.
Oh, hold on.
A copy of your book.
Oh, God.
Some swag. We'll give them a swag because we're getting actual.
Give them a copy of my book. Why don't I give them something from your house?
We're getting
whatever's in Don's wallet.
We're getting honest to God Rick Emerson Show swag today.
Okay, first of all, stop. It's spelled and pronounced S-W-A-G.
But it's more fun to say
stuff
swag.
We all get.
You of all people should know that you can't just make up your own pronunciations for things. Don't be a Tarjay.
Ooh, wow.
And that's what that is. Seriously, that is – it's not Yiddish. It's not – it's
– He's so angry.
I just – look, I – don't malign. Look, have the Jews not suffered enough? You got to be making up words that sound like Yiddish.
Anyway, if you do guess what it is I spilled on myself today, we'll send you a couple of Rick Emerson Show stickers and a notepad. We have Rick Emerson Show.
They don't get the shirt? That seems kind of...
I like this shirt. Yeah. You just got to keep the shirt.
All about just giving away money from me without just... Is that even... quorum? There's no... We didn't have a vote.
Council of Nine was not confirmed.
Well, we could just give them, you know, a hearty congratulations.
You could make out with them. How much could that cost?
Want to give them one of those books that we have on the bookcase that have been sitting there for like a year that we were going to give away?
We have some whiskey or something.
Don Taylor will mouth fight you.
We have a half-empty bottle of creme de menthe that Rick and Sarah have that Greg and Sarah let sitting around forever.
I feel like we've passed the moment here. I feel like the event horizon is now. People are just typing mustard, cheese, soup, squid.
All of those
mustard,
are
cheese, soup, squid.
It would be hard to guess. I think I don't think anyone would guess what it is today because it's not something I usually have.
So. That's good. We didn't just waste the last 5 minutes of our lives. What were we talking about before this though? Before you spilled something. I was afraid that that somebody would then think that I had looked at the banner and just demanded I demanded it to be even larger, and so I was making the point that Steve, who was the manager of the store, said, and if you'd like, you can take the huge banner of your own name and face home and hang it in your home,
next to the others,
and I said, oh, that's well, that's funny, Steve. I know there's some humor content in that statement of yours. I appreciate the wry observation that I might want to hang my own face somewhere. I know I did that the one time in the office with the huge picture of my own. And then somebody says, also don't forget, you had several giant images of your face hanging off of freeway overpasses a couple years ago. So it wasn't hard for anyone to think you might want to take the banner home. Also, hundreds of signs that had your face on them were plastered all over town on the same day.
Yeah.
He said, it's not outside the realm of possibility you'd need yet one more picture of yourself.
Yeah.
Okay. There we go.
They do have a point.
Well, it's like if you have 12, you need the 13th. Otherwise, the other 12 are,
That's what I'm saying. It's an incomplete set.
Yeah.
It's Friday the 13th.
That's right.
It's like missing missing one cup from your tea, set.
Your California Raisins Hardee's glass set.
A baker's dozen of giant Rick heads.
That's what I'm saying. Okay. Well, let's do some news, and then we'll take a look at the life and career of Mr. Rodney Dangerfield that's coming up here in a few with Humor Meet Comedy 101. This, however, is Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
An intruder who was shot and killed after a confrontation with a Duluth woman. This would be Duluth, Georgia. In her shower.
Where's the other Duluth?
France.
And then one in, like, Minnesota or something?
I don't know, hence my interrogative statement.
Oh, you know the answer.
Anyway, the intruder who was killed after confrontation with a woman who was in her shower was likely stalking her for days and may have other victims. The 53-year-old woman, who is also a veteran private school counselor, was alone at the time of the Wednesday morning attack. The woman was getting out of the shower when she was met by a strange man with a kitchen knife. They said there was a struggle in the bathroom, and she fell in the tub. Police later identified the man as Israel Perez Puentes, a Cuban national who lived in Alpharetta, Georgia. The man was armed with a kitchen knife, spokesman for the police said. A struggle ensued between the two of them. She fell and injured herself. The woman tried to fight the man off with a shower rod, and he forced her into the bedroom. They said she told her attacker she had money in the room, but instead she grabbed a .22 caliber handgun and shot the man 9 times.
Awesome.
I shot him 9 times.
Do we? So she's just, was there, he just broke in?
Yeah, he just intruded.
So it wasn't like, it wasn't like, did she have like some say, history with him, or is he just some guy?
I don't think so, no. Although they said that his neighbors had spotted his car in the neighborhood several days before the attack, but hadn't reported it.
Creepy guy skulking around.
He'd been arrested for a burglary in December, and now they're saying that he had likely been stalking her for days and may have been stalking other people.
This is a guy who got what was coming to him.
Yeah.
Asking for it and received it.
The police said he may have seen her and identified her as being a potential victim.
Oh, really?
And he basically stalked her until he found the right moment to act on it.
That's deeply satisfying in a way. I know she probably wouldn't. She might not say that it was worth it, but I mean, that is the silver lining right there. Yeah. I mean, that is the omelet from the broken eggs.
And I also a woman who knows how to use a .22 caliber
is
handgun.
Hot.
Well, and also a .22 Yes, shoot them 9 times. Because you shoot somebody once with a 22.
You're just going to anger them.
Yeah. So, yeah, he ran out the back door and collapsed in the yard and then later died at the medical center.
Excellent. Well done.
She was naked with a 22?
Yes.
Even hotter.
Yes.
It's like the hotometer is like the needle is buried.
Have you seen that calendar that's just it's like scantily clad chicks on coffins?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Actually, no, I have. I didn't know there was a calendar.
Yeah.
I thought there was just a...
One for every month. Yeah. It's 12 months of lovely casket-laying beauties.
Well, in conclusion, a friend and neighbor of those women... A friend and neighbor of the woman named Dan Tucker said he was not surprised at how well she defended herself. He said, she's smart, she's witty, and obviously well-prepared.
Seriously. No, I mean, that's the...
I have money in here, and also some bullets for you. Yeah.
Well, that's
here, let me just get my wallet out of... Bam, 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 bam!
And I am, they used to sell... that wasn't a watch of any kind, was
no.
it?
No.
It wasn't in Florida.
No.
It was in Duluth.
Georgia.
France.
As much as I'm not a guy who has I don't own a gun or whatever because I am not responsible enough to own one. But I was, if you are a person who's going to own a gun, that's fine. But really, honestly, spend the extra $12 and get the lessons because that's not a thing you want to be reading the quick start guide, as the guy's kicking in the window. You want to be able to go how about I break into your brain with a bullet,
Well, I know I've told this story before. We went when I married Patrick. When I first met Patrick, he said, on our very first date, he said, oh, and I have a lot of guns.
So you'll need to come home with me.
And I said, really? And I said, it was kind of like, and you're telling me this. Why? He said, well, just in case that might be some kind of deal breaker. If you're someone who hates guns and you'd be freaked out by it, I thought you should know. And I was like, oh, well, that's very nice of you to let me know. He said, would you like to see them? And I was like, sure, why not? So he took me to this walk-in closet. At which point I'm going, okay, this maybe
smelled faintly of chloroform and struggle.
But I looked at it, I was like, you do have a number of guns. Look at that.
You're awesome.
But then when we went on our honeymoon, we drove out to the coast and he had this briefcase and he put a pistol in the briefcase because he said,
see, Hunter Thompson?
It was something he said when you're going on a road trip. And you're on the road, you should be, I don't know. But the thing is,
Mr. Escobar can be very testy.
My husband was in the Army. He was actually in the military police in the Army, and he grew up in, Albany, Oregon and such, and grew up around guns. And so, he's always known guns. But yeah, he had the pistol. We got back from our honeymoon. We've been gone for, 6 days. We get home, and we pull up for the house, and we see the TV is on in the living room. And we're both like, I didn't leave the TV. Why would the TV – has the TV been on for 5 – why is the TV on? He's like, okay, just wait here. And he gets out. And in this very smooth – and if you've ever met my husband, he's kind of like a big goofball. He's like a big dog. He's just a big sweetheart of a guy and just like, hey, and very sunny.
Do you think
of him as being a sidler?
No, and he flips open the briefcase, pulls out the pistol, puts it in the back of his pants. Walks up to the door, unlocks the door, and I'm sitting in the car and I see him unlock the door and I see him do the thing of reaching back, pulling the gun out of the back of his pants, pushing the door open very slowly, and it's like this part of me that's going, I should not be finding this as hot as I do. Oh.
I'm sorry. I thought that was appropriate, pulling the gun out.
But yeah, it was like...
And then, Beretta, he's around back.
But then what was the upshot of it?
I don't know. The TV was just on. We think maybe the cat sat on the remote or something.
He shot the TV 9 times.
Or somehow we just managed to go out of town for 5 days and left the TV on. There were no intruders.
And this is probably still the case, but when I was a younger man, there was I think Wes Anderson said this. He said every guy goes through a phase where they're into... If I can remember this correctly, every guy goes into a phase where he's into 3 things. None of them profane, amazingly enough. Piranha, petrified wood, and butterfly knives or something is the third one. I don't think that is the third one, but every guy's into piranha and petrified wood. It's like they just find it fascinating.
Yeah.
And I think the third one is something like nunchucks or whatever. By the way, just as a side note, I swear to God, so I went into the Plaid Pantry by my house the other day, which is just like a weird port of souls. And I walked in, and first of all, it's that thing, you go into the store late at night, and the music is just blaring, because they don't...
stay awake.
And the manager's not going to be there, because it's 2 in the morning.
Yeah.
And so this guy has, and it's just some, just... The guys who work at the Plaid near my house are all huge fans of I just, it all is sort of like death metal to me, but, you know, grindcore or, you know, your sort of your carcass.
Cookie Monster kind of. Like,
yeah, oh, you're kind of like, oh,
carcass rock.
Yeah, you know, whatever. You know, where there's always like one, there's always two guys in the band, like the John and the Paul, and the one guy goes, the one guy's going, and the other guy's going, in the background, and you're going, okay, I got $3 on pump two, but it's like all death metal all the time once dark falls at that Plaid Pantry. So I walk in, and the death metal is just like blaring like from behind the counter. There's a new guy who's working there because the overnight guy has like moved to evenings or something. So there's like, it's just loud, and I'm like, all right, whatever. And I'm, you know, I'm going back to make my purchase. And so I get my, you know, like, because I wait until the Viso is two for three there, because that's the cheapest you can get it.
It's dropped $10 on Viso.
So it's like I get the 2-for-1, and then I come there, and I swear to God, I don't know why I didn't like tweet this at the time, because I've done that before from like, I am behind the most awesome guy at Plaid Pantry. But I'm walking up, and the new guy is, I swear to Christ, I swear to you with everything in me, this is Sunday maybe or Monday, he's behind the counter just doing that thing you do with a butterfly knife where he's going, whipping it open and closed again.
God.
And I mean, not in a threatening way, but just like, no. like he's practiced, like he doesn't want to lose his skills. Because every guy, Jim and I, you and I are about the same age.
Yeah.
You probably haven't, I mean, I would imagine, not held a butterfly knife in some time. Probably every guy from my generation, though, if you give him a butterfly knife, can do the one-handed open and close.
Yeah.
See? And you know exactly, you do the, where you turn it in your hand and you flip your hand the three times or whatever it is. Every guy can do that. And he was just sitting there just behind the counter like guys roll coins on their knuckles at a poker game. And then I walked up and I just said, I was pretty proud of myself. I didn't acknowledge that he was like wielding a knife, which when you think about it is sort of odd.
Yeah.
Because if you went to like any other business, like at the bank, and a guy behind there was just holding a knife going, help you? You'd go like, no, and then leave. But I just kind of set my finger, go, I'll take these. And he goes, okay. And just like set the knife down and rang me up. It was very weird.
Be awesome if he shoved the knife through the cash on the table and then handed you your change. It's
yeah, I don't know which Plaid Pantry is the one you're talking about. There's one up. There's
one by pirates, apparently.
Well, there's a lot. There's one up Division, like around.
On 29th.
Yeah.
I know where that is.
And I've been there a few times in the morning before I've come in here. And there's a guy who works the first part of the day at that Plaid Pantry who is terrifyingly cheerful. He's like friendly to the point where you're actually put off by it a little bit. Where he's just like, hey, hi, how you doing? Hi,
we're gonna be great friends. We're gonna be pals.
Yeah, it's a little bit freaky.
I think there may be a store wide, like a chain wide edict that has gone out about that because there's the Plaid that I, which is not the one I was just talking about, the Plaid that is actually on. It's on Powell and like 17th. It's one that's sort of weird and retro looking. I noticed about a month ago that they started being, and I didn't, they're not like off putting about it, but I noticed that they started doing the Chase Bank thing of saying, hi, how are you today? And like, and not just as a fluke, like every time. And with every customer. And so I wonder if there's some sort of a thing that's gone out that like they're trying that as like a, like some sort of a policy across all their stores.
Yeah. I will say though that this particular guy is freaky, just freaky, too chipper and friendly. And particularly when you're going in to just like get your caffeine.
Yeah.
It's just
I don't want to be talked to.
And then I had that weird like the sort of disconnect of going into the Plaid Pantry and having not only Mr. overly cheerful guy, but then having to like battle an angry hobo to get my coffee, and so I'm in the store like
hobo with a coffee.
Both of them
answer
at the same
me these
time.
Questions three.
Oh, you
it's like, look, shoestring. I just want some decaf. Can you sidle aside for a quick sec?
That's awesome. Somebody wants to know if you're married to Jodan Baker.
Yes. Mitchell, our
Patrick
founder.
Is if Jodan only. Baker.
If only. Speaking of Patrick, I kept meaning to tell you the story, by the way.
Speaking of Jodan Baker,
Patrick came home last night. He told me, because his job involves him delivering stuff around town to Dentist's office. No, he apparently he was delivering something the other day to one of the dentist offices that he works with, and he dropped something off, and he talked to the lady, you know, as you do at the receptionist for a few minutes because he sees them every day, so he knows them all. And he left, and as he was leaving, he was saying, bye, Patrick, see you tomorrow. And he came back in the next day, and she said that there was a customer in there waiting, and he said, is that Patrick Hurley? Is he married to a woman named Dawn? Apparently, it was a listener. And they were like, oh, yeah, no. And apparently the guy said, she said, well, yeah, his wife's name's Dawn. She does a radio show. And he said, yeah, I listen to the Rick Emerson show. He said, I know way too much about him.
How are those legs, Patrick? Anything I can do? Excellent. That's fantastic. Yeah, that never stops being it stops being creepy, but it never does stop being sort of weird. Where you just go, well, that's odd that you know that. Okay,
because you kind of get stuck in this like enclosed universe and don't realize that other people are listening. So it becomes like this weird Truman Show.
Never remember people are listening ever. Yeah. And I guess I should clarify that because that's because I think we all sort of know what I mean. It's not that, which is not a thing of like, you know, where you like don't. It's a weird thing. It's a strange dynamic of, like, I think Stephen King says that thing about, in order to give the audience, in order to give the reader the best possible book, he says, I do them the favor of writing it for myself. Because if you think about it too much, then it weirds you out, and then you become some weird, stilted, like, I guess now's the time when I better start talking like Rick Emerson, because people are listening. So you just have to sort of do this thing of, like, doing the show, but then, like, not think about the fact that there's X number of people listening, because then it just weirds you out. But yeah. As a result, then when that happens,
yeah,
you're like, hey, the manager of Barnes & Noble, so give me the whole tour. And then at the end, he goes, okay, well, we're looking forward to it. Best show ever. And I was just like, and I went, okay, because, you know, it had never occurred to me that somehow that this thing I'd been talking about relentlessly would actually be known by anybody in the outside world.
Well, so I had this thing. I've always had this thing, and maybe Jim can relate to this, maybe not. But when I was doing comedy, when I was doing theater, and I do stuff on stage, there's this thing of like, you know, I realize I'm up on stage in front of an audience, but it seems to me it's like it doesn't occur to me there's any reason why they'll remember who I am when I'm not up there in front of them. So even like a half an hour later or something, I bump into somebody who'd seen the show and they're like, hey, I saw your show. And it's like, and it takes me aback a little bit because yeah. I feel like I will now like go back to being anonymous and invisible now that I'm not on stage anymore. So it's a little bit strange when it's like, oh, you actually, you person who I have never seen before know who I am.
Yeah, it's like a window kind of opens into your world, and more than just who you're talking to or conversing with directly is able to enjoy it. So there's like this door swung very wide, and so all these people can sort of see it all at once. And you think that like it's just going out there and not really kind of being absorbed by anyone until they acknowledge it, and then you're just like, oh yeah, that's right. Oh cool.
Oh, you remembered that happened 15 minutes ago. Yeah, I figured as soon as it was over, the experience would be done for you and you would move on to something else.
It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Speaking of all that comedy, so we'll get to Humor Me Comedy 101 here in just a skosh, talking about Mr. Rodney Dangerfield today. Also, don't forget, if you do want to hear more of Don Taylor's musings and observations and stylings, you can do that at hamfistedradio.com or at cascadia.fm live Wednesdays at 4 p.m. We should do – so we got watches to get to, yes?
We do. We do.
You guide us here.
Do you have some kind of a spot to read? Do you want to sponsor?
But do we have to do that right now?
Yes. Yes, we do.
Why?
Because I have to go to the bathroom.
Well, we could do like an actual
– okay.
We could take a little break. A little sojourn into musical requests. Anyone? I didn't have anything prepared.
Well, you know what I'll always say.
Sabotage.
Any day of the week.
I fear that might be. I think what we discovered last week, which was great, by the way. There's like long discussion of, but I do believe that I think in terms of sheer musicality, I think we've discovered a bit of a polarizing musical avenue.
How about one of those?
Like, I think Jenny actually said about her daughter. She said, "I would rather let my daughter listen to 1,000 Penis Watchers than one Sabotage record."
Oh, what a good parent she is. How about one of them new Social Distortion songs?
Ah, yes, I'll do that. Excellent. Fantastic. Well chosen, Don.
Thank you.
All right, so we're back after this. We'll have a penis watch, a cannibal watch, and then Humor Me, Comedy 101. Somebody else. By the way, so we'll do the Social Distortion song, and then we have an instant request. Thank you for being quick on the draw. Guy whose name I don't – Bill. So we'll do Social Distortion, then we'll have Bill's request following that, after which we will return. You are listening to the Rick Emerson radio program right here as part of the Emerson News Network. Go nowhere. We return after this.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Was a moonlight mishap? You lost your party hat. Seems your lifestyle ain't so worthwhile after all. A heavy-hearted taxi ride and a walk on the wild side. Did you call an angel let you down? Gonna lay low and play it straight. It's time to rejuvenate. Gonna kickstart your heart to come around.
Listening to the Emerson News Network.
We started the tour out in Denver, Colorado. I made the first one, but I did not make the second show. 'Cause I met this girl there that brought about quite a big change. But I OD'd in Denver and I just can't remember her name. I guess you could say that my love life was not up to par. Too many nights alone had left some permanent scars. She told me she'd love me and I told her that I'd do the same. Then I OD'd in Denver and I just can't remember her name. I brought it on myself and I guess that I shouldn't complain. Doc says, son, you can't do any more of that cocaine. Well, she made me higher than all of those expensive things. But I OD'd in Denver. I wish I could remember her name. Now I turn to other things, trying to make my daydreams real. But they don't take the place of a woman's face and her feels. She treated me nice and I'd like to find her again. But old Eden Dender, I just can't remember her name. Yeah, I brought it on myself and I guess that I shouldn't complain. Be damned if I'll ever do any more of that cocaine. Well, she made me higher than all of those expensive things. But old Eden Dender, I just can't remember her name. Kinda overdid it in Denver, and I just can't remember her name.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Now, seriously, my headphones are in knots that don't seem possible. I didn't even touch them. They were sitting on the table. I don't even know how this knot is possible.
No.
It's like a Chinese finger trap or something. How did this happen?
I don't know.
It makes no sense at all. For the love of God. All right. And apparently we're at some sort of merengue party. We all have to... Quick, find Gabrielle. All right.
How are you enjoying the salmon?
Okay. Just going to go to a different bed. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It's 503-505-6964. Actually, I'll go to this bed and I will take a moment to say that coming up, we got Humor Me Comedy 101. We have a penis watch on the way, cannibal watch, and this weekend we're going to be cycling through a lot of archived programming from earlier this week, Legion of News, the Rick Emerson Show, and then some things from the archives. Also, Don Taylor's going to take a moment to talk to you about Wonder Northwest, because I'm going to walk into the kitchen.
Wonder Northwest is the comics and pop culture convention. It's taking place
citrusy
this weekend at Crown Plaza Hotel, which is somewhere here in Portland. West Side, I think. I don't know. I haven't quite looked it up yet. Patrick was saying, hey, Don, do you know where this thing is? And I said, yeah, it's at the Crown Plaza Hotel. And he said, do you know where that hotel is? And I said, no, that's why we have Google Maps. I'll look it up later. So, anyway, if you can find the Crown Plaza Hotel, that's where it is.
It's kind of like one part con, one part scavenger hunt.
Yeah. Mr. Rick Emerson is going to be hosting a panel on podcasting that's taking place on Sunday.
What?
And it will feature folks like Fatboy Roberts and others. Not me. No one asked me to be on any panel.
What's the panel called, Don?
It's called Kneel Before Pod.
Yes, it is.
There's also going to be a panel about Godzilla. And there's going to be a panel on Saturday with an epidemiologist talking about zombie stuff.
Podzilla. Why didn't I think of that?
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, there's the epidemiologist is going to talk about how the actual zombie plague will spread.
Yes.
The actual nuts and bolts of how it would work.
And what you need to do to protect yourself.
Awesome.
It's at 1441 Northeast 2nd Avenue, there Crown Plaza Hotel.
The
Giving
zombie
her
walk.
A fish.
What's that?
Giving her a fish.
Yeah. The zombie walk will end there. So the place will be full of zombies on, I guess that's Saturday is the zombie
walk? Okay, so Saturday, it really is. You can find out more of this, by the way, by going to mayofthedead.com. That is all one word, mayofthedead.com, where there is, you can get several things there. You can find out when the zombie walk is happening. This was going to be like a Squire's Electric thing, which it will be at some point. You can find out everything there, including we've got details on the zombie walk, also the zombie prom, which is happening that night at Bossa Nova. Our friend Heather Erickson putting together the zombie prom. Also at mayofthedead.com, you were able to, we've got links to a lot of things, including you were able to get the map of the actual zombie walk, so you see the route that it's going to be taking. And then Sunday is the second day of Wonder Northwest. That's when I'll be doing the panel at noon. So it really is, it is just like a Friday and Saturday and Sunday of like Gaussian proportions. I mean, it really is just, it's immense and awesome and fantastic.
And we will be there and we will have a table and we'll be doing a little something. We'll be interacting with the folks.
Who are you taking to the zombie prom there?
I don't think I'm actually going to the zombie prom. No. I don't have the outfit for it.
Much like the real prom, I was not asked either. So
I went with a friend of mine who's gay and I had to pay for the tickets.
To the zombie?
To the real prom. Yeah, that was... not a high point of my life. And he spent the whole night jitterbugging with somebody and while I had to sit and
jitterbugging.
Entertain her date.
Oh,
the math teacher.
The
yeah.
dance.
So that's happening, and we'll have stuff and things, and we'll be happy to meet you and talk to you. Also, it's if you're digging into your pocket to buy this and you're thinking, a convention? Conventions are so expensive. I can't possibly go to this. It's $6.
That's not bad.
For the day. It's $10 if you want like a pass for both the days. So it's quite affordable to just go and hang out and walk around and do stuff.
Thank you. I needed to get a beverage. That worked perfectly.
Yeah.
Squires Electric makes all of this discussion of zombies and Joe Don Baker possible.
Yes.
SquiresElectric.com is their website, or Facebook.com/SquiresElectric. You can also call them. It's 503-252-1609. It's 503-252-1609. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. And by the way, I got to thank Joe Squires for actually coming out to the reading signing last night. That was, it was just unexpected. He's a busy guy. He's got things going on. But made time for those that intersect with his life. So thank you to Joe Squires for coming out. You can find them again on Facebook at SquiresElectric.com. Or at, the phone number, 503-252-1609. So if you find yourself trying to get your house in order, you got spring coming, you're going to be cleaning out, you're going to be going down to the basement trying to get things, rewired because you're going to be remodeling, you're going to be turning the unfurnished basement into a furnished basement, or you got kids moving away, or, the kids are graduating and, you want to make sure they don't come back home. You just, knock out a wall, get rid of that bedroom now. But, there's cables in there, there's wires. And here's the other thing, occasionally, snakes. Seriously.
Really?
Go to Facebook.com/SquiresElectric. You will see what they dealt with. This is, I think, on Wednesday. The caption actually reads, the perils of being an electrician. He said, I've had service calls where mice have sought the warmth of electrical boxes and shorted themselves out, but this is the first time I've had a snake waiting for me. And then there's a picture, swear to Christ, of, like, the snake wrapped around some electrical cabling. Or, those metal-sheathed wires that are, like, on the outside of your house going into the box. There's just a snake right there. I mean, which is the thing, like, come on, let's be honest. If you're talking about some home maintenance where there's a serpent waiting for you, like, that's where you call somebody. You know what
yeah.
I mean? Like, when, if
Conan,
you have to
preferably.
Speak parcel tongue to change a fuse. It's time to just delegate. So that is SquiresElectric.com or Facebook.com/SquiresElectric.
And that's not like a regular snake either. That looks like something kind of exotic.
Yeah, no, it's a death-eating snake. When it comes to wires or wiring in your home or business, they make your life easier and venom-free. That is Squires Electric. Squires Electric, 503-252-1609.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
The two Oregon senators are hoping to increase the speed limit on the state's highways and freeways to 75 miles per hour.
Woo!
For most vehicles.
Yeah, buddy.
Senator Jason Atkinson of Central Point and Senator Bruce Starr of Hillsborough plan to add the legislation as an amendment to a bill currently before the Business, Transportation, and Economic Development Committee. Atkinson said, Oregon is the only state west of the Mississippi with highway and interstate speed limits less than 70 miles per hour. Business and commerce suffer as a result.
Is it true in Montana, do they still have the no speed limit?
Oh, I'm
there was
sure.
a while in Montana, literally, with yeah. legally, they had no speed limit in Montana on highways.
Yeah, I thought that the only kind of cursory rule is if you were caught doing 100 miles an hour or more, you would get like some kind of a cursory citation.
Well, there was
for wasting a fossil fuel.
They would there was like they had you follow the basic speed rule, which is I think which is a law that is in all states that says if you were going faster than the conditions, faster than is safer for existing conditions,
yeah.
that they can ticket you at their discretion if they think like it's snowy and so you got to be whatever. But yeah, there was this whole it was a great thing where they were like, and we've gotten rid of the speed limit, and it seemed like kind of like nobody. like it was this moment of anarchy that like shouldn't have happened.
Yeah,
I was like, I don't think the government knows that they've done this. I mean, it's like you're not allowed to just get rid of the speed limit. And then they did. And we were like, that's awesome. Don't tell anybody, but tell everybody.
Those who have been to Montana, I would suggest reading Stephen King's Desperation, because that those long stretches of lonely road really kind of hearken to that book. It's really fantastic. And we'll never want you to go back.
Let's see. By the way, I go to type in Montana speed limit, and first result is Montana speed limit fatalities.
Are there pictures?
Followed by reasonable and prudent. Let's see. Speed limits. Okay, so here's the deal. The deal with Montana speed limits, pardon me, is this. Let's see. Approximately 13 years, no speed limit in the United States exceeded 55 miles an hour. Prior to that, speed limits were mostly the same as today. More often higher or more often higher or non-existent in rural areas. Montana and Nevada, among others, previously had no statutory speed limits for cars and motorcycles in certain conditions. But now the speed limit in Montana is, in fact, oh, this is very sad. But now they have a speed limit. Now the speed limit is 80. Well, that's still pretty awesome,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, but, I mean, even if it's more than your vehicle can go, you don't want there to be a number there. You just want it to be like, go, man, go.
There's like, so there's a, it's like an entire, there's like an entire history here. You can read, unsurprisingly, on Wikipedia all about Montana and their sort of, unorthodox approach to speed limits. That apparently is, they had a sort of a don't tread on me thing going on where it wasn't the man, you know, the man's job to do that. So the history is, on March 10th, 1996, a patrolman issued a speeding ticket to a guy going 85 in a Camaro with less than 10,000 miles on the odometer. The officer gave no opinion as to what would have been a reasonable speed. The driver was convicted. The driver appealed to the Montana Supreme Court. The court reversed the conviction. But then because of this, anyways, it was a long thing, but because of this, they established what is called the reasonable and prudent law, which means that that is basically at the discretion of the cop. So this is sort of like the basic speed law thing again. So yeah. Once it is a free land no more. That is another avenue of pleasure that has been closed off to us as Americans. We should do a watch here, Don.
I was going to. Cannibal watch, in fact.
Here's your cannibal watch for Friday right here on the Rick Emerson Radio program. This is Don Taylor with your Cannibal Watch.
A cannibal has been arrested after his dinner guest changed his mind and called the cops. The would-be victim from Switzerland answered an internet advertisement from the 43-year-old man seeking someone who would agree to be killed, cooked, and eaten. He claims he thought the offer, posted by a man in Slovakia, was nothing more than a macabre fantasy game. But he said after speaking to the unnamed man on the phone, he realized he was deadly serious. He alerted Swiss police, who informed their Slovakian counterparts on Monday. The cops sent in an undercover officer posing as the victim in a sting operation to catch the suspected cannibal.
To catch a cannibal.
But as officers attempted to arrest the man yesterday in the northeastern village of Kaisak, a gunfight broke out and the man and a cop were shocked. A Kaisak police spokesman said, "It appears this man was genuinely seeking to eat someone. His ad said he wanted someone who would agree to be put to sleep, then killed, cut up, cooked, and eaten."
So not just a gag, not just a goof.
No. One of our officers and the suspect both suffered gunshot wounds during the arrest and are both being treated in the hospital.
Did the victim that would agree to all this, did they get anything out of it? I mean, did like their next of kin?
Well, the pleasure of, a job well done.
Yeah.
Of making someone else happy. He was a giver.
The part about this that is interesting to me is that there's a guy who actually answered the ad thinking it was a fantasy role-playing thing.
Yeah,
he thought he was going to be, like, I guess, killed and eaten in a sexy way.
Well, but see, this is the thing that happens about every 18 months. There is a story about a guy, usually in Germany, who will place an ad wanting to eat a guy, and then some other guy will answer it. And then, like, that, there was that famous German cannibal from a few years ago where it's like he literally, like, that's how he found it. Like, I want to kill and eat you. And the guy was like, me. And he went, no, really, I want to kill and eat you. The guy's like, yes. It's like, no, seriously, in a pan.
Fill out this waiver.
Yeah, and the guy's like, have at it. I've been force-feeding myself grass all week.
I haven't been moving very much, so my muscles are all very atrophied.
And so that, but he's this famous German cannibal. He's a huge, like, sort of celebrity criminal there because it was just such a bizarre case. But one of the great regrets of my life is that we never. So when this story happened, you know, we were sort of talking about this a lot, and it shone a light on this sort of dark area of human. I don't even call it sexuality, but just human bizarre, like, fetish interest. But somebody, we got a listener who sent us sort of this kind of anonymous, you know, sort of anonymous tip or basically. But he goes, hey, if you go to this, if you go online, you go, there's this Yahoo chat room that is called, like, I remember what it was, but he's like, there's this Yahoo chat room and it's called Fetish something, something, something. He's like, go in there, and he's like, if you're there for more than a day or two, he's like, eventually you will see a guy whose username is whatever. And he's like, he is always on there looking for he's looking for a guy to eat him. And I was like, really? He goes, I'm not screwing with you. He's like, if you're there for any length of time, you will see this guy, like, you know, Gruber 75 appear, and, like, he always wants to be eaten, and it's, like, the weirdest thing. And we're like, okay. So we went on Yahoo a couple of days, and sure enough, after, like, 2 or 3 days, the guy was there. And we had this, and we did our very best. It's like reeling in a trout really slowly, you know, so you don't, you know. We were trying so hard to get him to just come on the air, like, just anonymously, you know. And I was like, we'll find a way to mask your voice. We'll put it through a harmonite. Nobody will know who you are. We were telling him, like, we're not going to judge. We just want to know what the hell, like, where does this come from? And the guy talked to us for a couple of days, and then he just said, you know, he's like, I just don't want to talk about it. And we never heard from him again. It was
under mysterious circumstances.
So bizarre. I mean, and the guy was clearly serious, or at least thought that he was serious, because he had that weird, strangely wooden, like, angular way of speaking that a lot of guys who are smart but, like, deeply warped and on the internet do, where they just – it's this odd, clipped, very, like – inflectionless kind of dialogue that you have with them, and then after a couple of days, he got spooked and just sort of vanished. And we never got him on. But that was one of those moments where I was just, you know, seeing, like, a Peabody Award in my future.
I was just like, you know, what do you what are you doing right now? Like, oh, just sitting here in a giant vat of pickle brine, just
marinating myself,
just hanging out. What are you up to? Oh, just going through my recipes.
Yeah, it was a strange conversation. I think it goes without saying, but I was really disappointed that we were not able to make that happen. But you know, what are you gonna do? So there's your it's your cannibal watch for let's see. What can you do? We tried.
If it's getting cold, reheat it. Have a big dinner. Have a light snack. If you don't like it, you can't send it back. Just eat it. Eat it. Get yourself an egg and beef.
All right, let's do one more, and then we'll do Humor Me Comedy 101, which is Mr. Rodney Dangerfield. But before that, ladies and gentlemen, and members of Jenny's family.
Take a look at my enormous penis. And my troubles start a-melting away. I take a look at my enormous penis. And everything is going my way.
The thing I realized is, I've wondered this, but after having them in the studio, so that is Paul that sings lead there. That's and Storm is in the background. That's the difference. So it's I for a while I thought it was the other way around, but no, that's Paul.
Quickly more on the cannibal thing. There is this woman, I don't even remember how I came across this, like, about a year ago. There's this woman named Megan Vaughn, and she is an artist and a photographer, and she specializes in, like, sexy pinup cannibal girl photos.
What do you mean, cannibal girl?
It's a specific, apparently a very specific fetish.
I'm a cannibal girl.
It's a very specific fetish that involves fetishizing beautiful women being, like, prepped to be cooked and eaten by cannibals.
It's a strange world.
And she does a bunch of comics of it. And there's actually, if you go to Art by Meg, M-E-G-H, she does a bunch of photography.
Hello.
Along those lines as well. And it's all weird fetish photos of
but there's boobs.
Naked ladies being bound up and put into ovens.
One where she's being cooked in a pot by some
a large breasted black cannibal.
But it clearly
lady.
Is like a. But it's clearly like a native eating the missionaries thing.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. You know, it's porn.
This one, she's on a chopping block and having oil poured on her because they're preparing her, I guess.
Well, but so this is like a variation of like the food porn, right? Where it's like chicks covered in like meringue or something.
Well, no, that's different because it's a lot more, it's messy, and that's part of the appeal is that the food is smeared and kind of, that's a little bit more picturesque in that they want it to sort of appear in one way, whereas in the other one, they want it to be just like,
oh, this is
all
like the chicks and coffins thing then,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah,
it's like two things you're in, two great tastes that taste great together.
Yeah, it's the chocolate and peanut butter of the zombie porn world.
Okay, no, I can say, well, you know, there is at Cosmic Monkey Comics, I think. Is that where the Film Fever Radio or Geek in the City Awards were a couple years ago?
Yeah, Cosmic Monkey.
So there was a magazine there. I think Kelsey, of all people, was the one who showed it to me. And it was, I think it was like a one-shot, like some of those parody magazines that like Spy would put out in the 80s or whatever. But it was like basically like a girly magazine, like not nude, but it was sort of, you know, it was like Playboy with, you know, but slightly, with slight bits of covering. But it was all like, It was like hot undead or dead or zombie chicks, but like posed and like real, like all sexy, like exactly like what you would see in Playboy, where it's like soft focus and gauzy curtains, but then like she's a zombie. It was all like, and it's like, and then what? And then some of them were just like, and they were all obviously posed and whatever, but it was all like hot dead chicks, and so like it was like, well, you know. Jill is a fine example of womanhood. You know, we didn't want a little thing like death to get in the way. So, a shovel and a mining helmet and one moonless night, and we had everything we needed for a photo shoot. And it's like it's like her like sitting like next to a grave that looks like it's been dug up, like they've just taken her and propped her up, and then photographed her. And you know, it's like it was like a whole and it was laid out though just like a men's magazine. It was so bizarre. And Kelsey and I talked for like 10 minutes about whether it was a gag or whether it was for a very specific fetish group or whether it was one masquerading as the other.
Yeah, it feels like a bait type situation where they're just trying to sort of lead somebody out to just be like, to see who's little too into
it. It's as funny as a joke, right?
Yeah. And then tell them that they've won Super Bowl tickets and they need to meet at this undisclosed location.
Yeah, don't buy that with your credit card.
No. Here's your penis watch.
So here's the question. Again, I will give this one to Jim because we've had multiple penis watches. Do you want to hear the medical mishap penis watch or the violent crime penis watch?
I will go with medical mishap because that's always hopefully ends with a good ending. So.
Okay, a Taiwan doctor has been indicted for
a
botched circumcision, which allegedly caused infection and left the patient with a shorter penis.
Well, ideally, that's kind of what happens.
Chen Chun-Nan, owner of the Chen Urology Clinic in Taichung in central Taiwan, was indicted by the prosecutor's office on charges of medical negligence causing injury to the patient, who was identified only by his last name, which was Tseng. Tseng, 34, is seeking $2 million dollars, which is $66,000 in U.S.
I like the fact that if he asked for $2 million instead, I think that'd be kind of cool.
Chen allegedly treated Tseng for an inflammation by performing a circumcision that failed to heal.
Ooh.
Tseng spent 20 days in the hospital, where he underwent 4 surgeries to clean up the infection and received a skin graft. The ordeal of this, the ordeal left his penis about half its former size.
Whoa!
Oh, no,
whoa!
No,
half?
No, that's, I mean, really, that's just like where they're toying with you.
Yeah.
That's where they're mocking you.
Yeah, he is quoted as saying, "My girlfriend has left me because of this. I am the only son in my family and have the duty to have a son to carry on the family name. I am worried that I cannot now find a wife." Dr. Chen denied that the circumcision failed, arguing that Tseng had infections because his body's resistance was weak. It wasn't.
Is this like when your faith isn't strong enough for the guy in the tent to lay his hands on you?
It wasn't my cutting things off of your penis. It was your body's failure to survive.
Your body has brought shame on whole penis.
The captain's panel on medical affairs found that Chen should have treated the infection first.
You think?
No.
And that the circumcision actually caused the infection to spread.
That's hard to believe.
But,
Jesus, God.
But half? I figured it was like one of those like cigar tippers where like there's a built-in, like you can't go beyond the certain...
Well, and I don't, but here's the thing, but here's what I don't understand when they say half. This is sort of like taking links out of a chain, except that I don't know how you put the links back together. In other words, how do you remove half and then have it, like, how do you put it back together? I don't even...
Well, I'm going away this week, and I can't take the whole guy with me. I'll just take the penis.
It's not like Legos where you can just snap it apart and take some bricks out in the middle and put it back together.
You're not just losing half. You're also losing an important part of it at the front.
Yeah.
But is that it?
I would imagine so, because it said half.
Or do they reconstruct that part, but then the rest of it is just shorter? Like it's like when you fold George Washington into a mushroom.
Now, it does say it's half its former size. It might not be from the length. It might be from the width.
That's what I mean. Well, they had to do a skin graft. I mean, who knows where that came from? That could have been from that same area.
There could just be a big chunk out of the midsection.
It's like a penis bottle opener.
Yeah. That story got worse the more we talked about it.
I'm sorry for saying penis bottle opener, by the way.
Yeah, really bad.
Hey, this is a good time, by the way, to read that email from Melody's mom.
Take a look at my enormous penis.
Let me just...
And my troubles start melting away. I take a look at my enormous penis.
Now, Melody.
Everything is going my way.
Melody herself is a listener, right?
Yes.
And so Melody knew how, like, penis-y and porny our show was when she gave her mom the gift certificate.
Yeah, well, and the mom herself listens to Legion of News is the thing. It's not like the mom was totally unaware of our particular approach to comedy.
Yeah, but we do talk about corpses and decapitations and nail gun accidents and penises a lot more on
But I mean, it's look, this is if you don't hear it, you're never going to get desensitized to it, Don. So we're doing her a favor when you really view it through that prism. I've got the email. So this is so the deal is that Melody is a listener, and for Mother's Day, she purchased her mother a 3-month subscription to the Rick Emerson Show, because apparently mom is a listener to Legion of News. And so we get this email from Melody's mom. Says, "I am Melody's mother. You may call me Your Grace." She says, "I really like you and your show. It's consistently funny, and despite my advanced age, I do get it. I enjoy listening." So there you go. So that is from...
Thank you, Melody's mom.
Let's see if I can...
Your Grace.
My apologies. Sorry. And then this is from Irvin. So I did get that name right the second time. E-R-V-A-N. Irvan. He says, "Hi, Rick. I finally subscribed. I am a long time..." This will take some of you back, by the way. He says, "I'm a long time listener, all the way back to when I was waiting for..." I don't have any. I wish I had some dun-dun-dun music. "I'm a longtime listener, all the way back to when I was waiting for Liz Wilde, and you came on instead. I, like a lot of your listeners, drove around in my service van all day, and your show helped me get through the day. I don't do much of that work anymore. I'm now doing very well as a YouTube partner." His name there is Irvin's, E-R-V-A-N-S. And he says, "Thank you for the Rick Emerson Show." No, thank you. So that is Irvin, new subscriber. So if you know somebody who you believe would enjoy this program, look, if Melody's mother, if Your Grace, Her Grace, gets who are you? I mean, who are you to say that your family is any less sophisticated? You might be surrounded by people that would enjoy basking in the warm glow of our amusements. So,
Or castration humor.
While we're doing emails, before we get to Jim's exciting segment, I also want to say we did get an email from a listener named Tony who wants to know if you will have copies of the Zombie Economics book for sale at Wonder Northwest this weekend.
I don't know. Is he going to be armed with copies of dollar bills and $10 bills?
He says, "I plan on heading out there tomorrow with cash in hand," he says.
Rick Emerson could probably find a way to accommodate you if you're bringing money.
Okay, so that happened. And also got from a listener named Rick, Don and Rick, or Rick and Don. "I once saw Life Mag..." We were talking about terminal velocity and bodies falling from high places and being all mangled and disfigured and stuff when they land.
Off the tallest building in the...
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he says, "Don and Rick, I once saw a Life magazine news photo of a woman who had jumped from one of the upper floors of the Empire State Building in either the 40s or 50s. She was a delicate-looking Marilyn Monroe-type chick, and although she had thrown herself from quite a high elevation, she was shown dead upon a crumpled car top, looking asleep, not kidding, and her body was oddly unmangled and or distorted. This was when I was a ute, so maybe 40 years ago. I was shocked that she was so intact, so people aren't always totally messed up upon impact. She actually looked kind of hot."
I was waiting. I knew that was going to be the payoff.
Yes,
of the whole thing.
Know, he says.
I know.
I know.
Knew that we knew. I was waiting for him to get to the But I mean, come on.
I'd still hit that.
She's sleeping and vulnerable. I mean, she's not dead. I mean, that'd be kind of weird. But
I mean, I am only a man.
Yeah.
I mean,
subject to like male frailties and whatnot. But no, that just goes to show that some people are naturally graceful, that even if they try and die in a horrific way, that God will be like, yeah, she's going to die and still kind of like be able to pull it off and look, you know.
Well, look, that's where the thing is, where, you know, where like men are sometimes viewed as being very judgmental. Men will actually, I think this email shows, men will actually cut you a lot of slack. I mean, she's dead. She fell off
a
building. She's crumpled on a car. But the guy, you know what it is, Don? He found something to like about her. Regardless, the rest of the world may have said she was no longer attractive. He found the thing about her that he was still attracted to. He was
a hop, skip, and a jump over to Taiwan to bury half a penis.
Didn't just discard her because she had some minor internal damage.
I also have one really quick story that I need to read before we move on, because somebody sent me this. A listener sent me this, and he actually sent me a PDF of it, a photo. He scanned it. This is from Augusta, Georgia, and you, Rick, particularly will appreciate this story. The headline is, Assailant Suffers Injuries from Fall. Orville Smith, a store manager for Best Buy in Augusta, Georgia, told police he observed a male customer, later identified as Tyrone Jackson, on surveillance cameras putting a laptop computer under his jacket. When confronted, the man became irate, knocked down an employee, drew a knife, and ran for the door. Outside on the sidewalk were four Marines collecting toys for the Toys for Tots program. Smith said the Marines stopped the man, but he stabbed one of the Marines, Corporal Philip Duggan.
Which is what they like.
The injury did not appear to be severe. After police and an ambulance arrived at the scene, Corporal Duggan was transported for treatment. According to the police report, and this is a direct quote from the police report, the subject was also transported to the local hospital with two broken arms, a broken ankle, a broken leg, several missing teeth, possible broken ribs, multiple contusions, assorted lacerations, a broken nose, and a broken jaw. Injuries he sustained when he slipped and fell off the curb after stabbing the Marine.
That is and you know, that's one of those things where the cops take in the report and go, I understand exactly what we're saying here, Lieutenant. That's wonderful. These things are icy, aren't they? Excellent. Well done. Simplify.
It's one of those high curbs, too. I mean, so it was really dangerous. Because you don't want somebody just driving in the front here. That's going to be, like, what, a good, like, 9 inches off the ground?
That is fantastic. See, it's the thing is, it's somebody, I hate to make this comparison. This is like comparing a guy on the internet to Hitler. Let me compare this guy who got beaten to Osama bin Laden. There was that whole discussion where Maureen Dowd wrote this great column about it. She was talking about the whole, like, everybody was happy for like a day, and then because we're just effed in this country, we can't ever be happy about anything. Then it was like all the navel gazing about, like, is it wrong to celebrate the death of Osama bin Laden? And, you know, does it make us bad people? And the thing is, I think it's so simple. It's that, like, so rarely in this life ever do just, you know, jagoffs just get what's coming to them, you know? It never happens. I mean, the guy, you know, not with, like, the dick next door to you that plays his music all night and keeps you awake. Not the guy that, like, hits your car and goes up with a note saying, like, sorry, you know, and just drives away. Not a guy who knocks down the World Trade Center. Not a guy who, like, decides to charge $14 a ticket for crap movies that you don't really want to see. You know, no one ever really gets what they deserve in this life. So when anybody, anywhere, gets what's coming to him, you kind of go, that's one. That's one right there. Off the
market zero.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, it's finally, this miserable goddamn world, somebody got his. Excellent. So that's like with this, too. You just, there's a great, actually, this is not a spoiler, but there's a great sequence in, it's a great moment in The Wire season three, I think, where there is it's sort of a side plot, but there's a youth again who's wanted by the cops for injuring another cop, and so they find this guy, and the guy's McNulty's reading the arrest report, and he said well, the, you know, what did they say? He said, well, this guy was, you know, this guy was pretty banged up when he got him in here, you know, and he's over here to the Eastern. He says, looks like you made a stop in the Western District as well, which is where the crime had happened, the assault of the police officer. And Bunk looks up and, yeah, the paddy wagon had to stop off for an unscheduled tune-up over in the Western. It took quite a while. And Some of those motor pools are dangerously underlit. A fellow could fall 500 or 600 times. You know, it's like the phrase an unscheduled tune-up. That's the thing. Is like you want to choose your victims very carefully if you're a criminal, because like that is there really is no one to complain to if you are like stabbing a Marine or like shooting a cop or whatever. Like who are you possibly going to complain to? But and then they beat me. I mean, it's like there's no. I don't think you could find a judge that would not just start chuckling at you. So I mean,
no, there was a time where when I was living back in Pennsylvania, I was working at a Dave and Buster's, and they had it was in a part of town where it was in the process of going through some renovations, so there was still a lot of like slums and areas around there. So this one guy who was a bouncer, but they don't call them bouncers at Dave and Buster's because that would, you know, imply something weird. They were called captains. So this particular captain had to deal with a very loud and obnoxious crackhead who was in there and literally wandered in somehow and was panhandling from people that were inside the restaurant and bar and like, almost going like table to table. So this guy is like trying very like politely and politely correctly to get them to leave. And of course they won't. And the more that this guy is trying to get him to go, the more that the crackhead is becoming more and more irate. So finally this guy gets him out the door, like starts to do the restraint or move thing, gets him in the door. The guy tries to bite him.
Oh.
And so at that point, the captain comes unglued. And this guy had to be, you know, just gacked out on some really, really primo stuff because he sort of shoved him away. The crackhead then came back at him, so he just blasted him in the face. And every time he'd hit him, he'd knock him down. The guy popped right back up, come at him again. And so this happened like 3 or 4 times. So finally, he just jumps on the guy while he's down and is like, stay down, or, you know, this is only going to get worse. And the guy's like missing teeth and gory and everything else. So finally, shoves him out the door, and the guy starts to leave. Minutes later, and he's like, doesn't even have time to clean himself up. Cops show up. And the cop's like, yeah, so you guys had a little bit of trouble here a couple minutes ago? And he's just like, yeah, we had this crackhead come in here. And he's just like, so how would you explain him missing some teeth? He's just like, oh, well, I was escorting him to the door. And, you know, we have like, those crash bars. And I think maybe he kind of slipped. And he's like, the police officer's like, yeah, it could have happened that way. You want to press any charges? And he's just like, no, actually. And he's like, okay, that's fine. The current outstanding warrants for the crackhead will more than take care of that. So it's one of those things where I guess is it, if you're in for a penny, you're in for a pound.
Yeah.
Like, if I'm going out big, I'm going out like gargantuanly huge.
And I think that is a cops. I mean, and everybody has their bad experience with a cop, and everybody has it. And there are certainly cops that are, you know, that cause more trouble than they stop. At the same time, you got to figure anybody who's in that job. Just like, our friend Scott, who was here yesterday looking at an issue with Don's car, he didn't even have to take the thing apart. He just, like, looked at, like, a light and, like, you know, stepped back and, like, you know, touched one of the doors with his hand for a second and felt the car's aura. And then, you know, and said, well, it feels like what happens here is you've got a fuel pump issue or whatever the hell was wrong. But it's like, he goes, like, it feels like it's probably
your
this.
Diodes is...
The car spoke to me.
He just sort of knew. And it's like, because he's seen 10,000 cars. And he knows how to sort of just look at them and check a couple things and read the symptoms. A cop probably can do that with people, too, where he just looks and goes, okay, well, you're probably a guy who wouldn't have beaten him otherwise, and he's a crackhead. So the equation is, you know, he immediately gets to the sum at the bottom, which is, just let it slide.
Yeah.
You know, and also paperwork.
Yeah.
That's the best thing you can do for a cop, by the way, is to eliminate the paperwork he's going to have to do. So when that guy didn't want to press charges, because the cop's thinking, don't press charges. I don't want to. And the guy's like, no. And the cop's like, excellent. We'll call it a day.
Thank you.
Yes. all right.
Private sector.
Big Jim Willig is our guest. You can find him online at bigjimwillig.com. That is bigjimwillig.com. I'm sorry. I just knocked over Christ in the studio. The Buddy Christ, which...
One of those days.
The Buddy Christ, which props up one of the many computational devices we have here.
I'm enjoying Big Jim's shirt today, by the way, as well.
Oh, is that the porn clerk shirt? Now, that's different than the one I had.
This one has actually recently been created by Christine Levine, who I found out owns the copyright for the compound word porn clerk.
Good for her.
She dropped the $750 and she now owns it, so she's got a website and everything else. And so she made this embodiment of T-shirts, which doesn't have any of her like contact info on it. This is mostly just for the employees.
That's awesome.
At the porn stores that we work at. So she's giving them away, or if you want to give her a small donation for one to the employees, they're more than welcome. So I'm like, do you have a XXX? She's like, yeah. I'm like, here's $5. And she's like, are you sure? I'm like, yeah, fuck.
Is it wrong that Christine like kind of simultaneously like turns me on and terrifies me?
No, that's the feeling you're supposed to have when you know Christine.
Like I get the feel. Here's the thing, like. I don't mean to be creepy, so if you're going to be creeped out by this, everybody can just, you know. But here's the thing about
you
Christine.
You don't mean to be creepy.
I'm just saying, like, no, it's just in me. The thing about Christine is, like, I get the feeling that like, if I spent too much time with her, that I would irritate her, and then she would either, like, stab me or punch me or harm me in some way, but then it would all be worth it, because then she would hold me to her her ample bosom and comfort me in that strangely hot yet maternal way that she has.
Well, with Christine, you would have to you can treat her very poorly, and she'll always have that sense of, like, unconditional love for you. However, if you cross one of her friends or family,
she'll have you destroyed.
Well, yeah. Well, no, she'll do it herself. She's very much that way. I had a guy call me up at the store, and the message came from a number I didn't recognize. I answered it, and very garbled, very, like, terrifying. Not really terrifying, but it was a message that I couldn't make out and then hung up on me. So I call him back, and it's, like, doesn't even have a ringtone. It's just, like, 2 seconds of silence, and then the FBI says that a home invasion happens every 15 seconds. Home security systems greatly reduce your chances of having this happen. If you want to know more about the ones that I'm selling, press 9.
Right.
If you don't want us to call you again, press whatever. So I press the button to have him talk to me, and it's the same guy from the recording that answers the phone, and I give him both barrels. I'm like, what is this? This is how you sell stuff? You scare people into calling you and blah, 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 blah. And he's like, well, sir, if you listen to the recording that was just playing, I'm like, spare me your pitch. I just, like, oh, I gave him, like, everything that I could. Then afterwards, Christine's like, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to wait, like, a week. Then we're going to call this guy back and tell him that we own a chain of porn stores and we need him to come down and take a look. Wet his whistle, make him think he's going to be making all kinds of money. Like, we may need to send you out to, like, a couple of states away where our other stores are. Just come on down. We'll work it out. And then when he gets here, be like, no, but do you want to buy, like, a dildo or vibrator or something like that? Oh, you don't like when people go out of their way to mess with you just to sell you stuff you don't need?
Awesome.
You know, I'm just like, you're a genius at revenge, so.
Oh, no, Chrissy Snow into the microphone there. I dig her. We'll have to have her on one of these days.
Absolutely, yeah, she would love that.
Someday when she's free, you gotta bring her in with you guys.
She's up in Spokane this weekend. She's got some L.A. gigs coming up as well, but yeah, we'll work something out.
Awesome. It is time once again for another installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101. Your host, Mr. Big Jim Willig.
Thank you very much, Mr. Emerson. Well, one of the staples of stand-up comedy is the lovable loser, the peppy everyman or woman who lives in a valley despite knowing that bad news inadvertently runs downhill. But nevertheless, they find a way to rise above the obstacles and the put-downs and setbacks, and thoroughly, through hard work, they find a way to succeed. The really good ones can even get the girl in the face of being butt ugly. Sorry, emo.
Just call me Mr. Butterfingers. Is my face red?
The underdogs of altruism are an inspiration to us all, because at the end of the day, we all want the same thing.
R-E-S-P-E-C-T.
Respect.
Respect!
Respect! Respect!
Respect!
Respect!
Well, that's the story of my life. No respect. Better
go
no respect.
Ah, Rodney Dangerfield, the master of self-deprecation.
When I was a kid, I was ugly, too. For Halloween, I had a trick-or-treat over the phone. My mother never breastfed me. She always had a headache.
He's a ladies' man.
I love your dress, don't you, Thornton? It's such a lovely shade of green.
Yeah, if that dress had pockets, you'd look like a pool table. You should try my tall and fat stores. No offense.
He's health conscious.
Like every day I wake up, I look in the mirror, I want to throw up. What's wrong with me? He said, I don't know, but your eyesight is perfect.
To us, Rodney can do no wrong.
Rapping Rodney, can't get a break.
And you're welcome for getting that song stuck in your head all day. With that, I'll turn the spotlight over to the other two rungs on this triple Lindy, Mr. Rick Emerson and Don Taylor. Your thoughts on the self-help guru I call Mr. Rodney Dangerfield.
Don Taylor.
Rodney Dangerfield is another one of those comedians that my father would quote, and I didn't realize that he was quoting. Although in this case, the jokes were so sticky, I knew he couldn't possibly have made them up himself.
Yeah.
Just things like, you know, well, as a kid, I was so unpopular, we'd play hide and seek and no one would look for me. And I think, okay, now that, you're just making that up. No, he stole it from Rodney Dangerfield.
Yeah.
It's impossible just not to love Rodney Dangerfield. A brilliant comedian, a master of timing, one of the old school one-line jokemeisters.
See, stuff that we shouldn't like, by all rights, because it should be so simple and dated and whatever that we shouldn't find it funny.
But he always seemed to both embrace it as a sincere art form, but there was almost a sense of irony about it. I mean, even when we were kids and he was doing it, it seemed like he was acknowledging that he was a throwback to something else.
Yeah.
You know, particularly, and just the way that he would always wear a tie. I mean, the tie became in and of itself a prop that he would play with to show, like, his nervousness and his agitation. But he wore a suit and a tie, which is something that, particularly when you got into, like, the 80s, you know, comics just didn't really do anymore. They didn't dress up for their stage performances.
Absolutely. You know, and it's one thing where most uninformed will sort of hear him and be like, oh, okay, that's kind of his one-note thing where he's like the worst embodiment or whatever. Like he's kind of like a one-note song that he just kind of keeps playing and playing. But Rodney kind of recognized that his appeal only kind of went so far. So what he went out of his way to do was to then create Dangerfields in New York and the string and then bring up all these comics that without Rodney Dangerfield, you wouldn't have heard of
Sam Kinison's,
Jim Carrey's. I mean, pretty much if Robin Williams, if they're anybody, they kind of like it was the top of the rung was obviously going to be Johnny Carson. But to get to Johnny, you kind of had to go through Dangerfields in order to kind of prove your steel.
I think part of the reason why he was always so gracious to young comedians is because he himself got into comedy really late. I think he was 37, 38.
Yeah.
I mean, it was very, very late, in the game to get into comedy. And he was, because he'd done a lot of things before that. You know, I think he tried to be sort of a crooner, like a straight singer. And I think he'd done acting. He was a singing waiter at one point. but when he finally got into comedy, it was, you know, kind of catching the last train out of town in terms of, like, you know, where he was in his life. Because that's just, you know, comedy is just like everything in the entertainment industry, so hotly competitive. And he never really seemed to forget that and how hard it was and how lucky he was to get his foot in the door, which is, and you hear anybody, he's sort of like Carson in that you hear anybody talk about Dangerfield and the opportunities he gave comics and the breaks he gave comics and the support or the advice that he would. I mean, I hear comics all the time. They will talk about, you know, either Carson or they'll talk about Dangerfield, and they'll say, like, and then, you know, Rodney came by and he said one phrase to me that I'll never forget, that I've, you know, and it's some piece of some gem of advice that Dangerfield had that, you know, and it's. It's the advice, and then also the fact that he did this way after he was famous, after he was making money being Rodney Dangerfield. He didn't have to be that guy. He could have been the headliner that never met the support act. He could have been the band that never saw who opened for them. You know, they were in their bus and they went on and they didn't talk to anybody. But Dangerfield always kind of kept himself at a street level. He kept very grounded. He was also one of the very first guys to entertainers to really embrace the internet with Rodney.com. And that is the thing that I think. It is easy to forget now that there was this time when the internet was, you know, it was very tentative, and it was a lot of like sort of, well, what do we do with this? And it's like, well, I don't know. Well, we could put up a picture, but then, you know, what else do we need Velveeta.com for? Like, what are we going to do? And Dangerfield was one of the first guys. His wife, who actually did a lot of his marketing and sort of was one of the overseers of how he sort of reached out to, you know, the next generation of comedians and to Hollywood. And Rodney.com was one of the very first celebrity websites that made any sort of an impact. And there was a time in the early days of the internet, back when Yahoo could still list, like, you know, cool new websites on their front page, when Rodney.com was one of the most visited sites on that, because it was one of the only really functional sites that did stuff. Because he was like the first guy. He put up, like, back when we all used this hideous real audio files, he would do, like, streaming. You could get streaming comedy, which now, I mean, how. By definition, I think we sometimes take that for granted, that you can listen to the Intertron and hear people speaking to you live. But, I mean, you could go Rodney.com and click it, and, you know, and it would be small and tinny and, you know, 12 seconds long, but you could click it and instantly have a Rodney Dangerfield joke delivered to you, which seems so weird now, but at the time it was just and the fact that he was, like, 70 already was doing it. I mean, it was amazing.
Absolutely. You know, and also you have the fact that Rodney was, when he did the movies, I felt that he was finally kind of being allowed to expand a little bit. So when you see him in, like, the Caddyshacks or in, like, the Back to School, he doesn't have to play the loser. Like,
right.
When I saw him in Back to School, I loved the fact that he was, like, a millionaire.
Totally.
And, like, he just went back in the college dorm room that he got to completely redesign and, you know, just he was that party animal. So he finally kind of got his comeuppance in that form.
And we always talk about movies that you rent over and over again, or movies that you will stop and watch every single time it's on TV. Back to School is one of those
movies.
Oh,
yeah. It's a great movie.
Other than Caddyshack, his movie career was not particularly stellar.
Wally Sparks.
I was going to say that. He was in Casper, you know.
Ladybugs?
Hey.
Hello?
Oh, Ladybugs.
Wait, but let's acknowledge Natural Born Killers.
I was going to say Natural Born Killers as the creepy, abusive
How
father.
How terrifying is that?
Oh, my God. But Back to School is one of my favorite comedies from the 80s. It holds up. It is always hilarious.
The other thing about Rodney Dangerfield is, by the way, it is sad and terrifying and sort of great, I guess, that I could probably, and I will not, but I could probably do like half of that Rappin' Rodney song. Because I had that tape, or on the front, he's got like a red headband. It was back when like nobody knew, you know, like, how do inner city young people dress? I don't know. Put a headband on him. And so he had a red headband and like a wife beater. And then what my father would have called a ghetto blaster on one shoulder.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then one side was stand-up comedy, and then the other side was the rap or whatever, which is dreadful. And there was a great moment on that Rappin' Rodney tape, though, when he was doing the stand-up, where he did his regular shtick, and then he did a kind of Q&A back into like a just ad-libbing with the audience, where he'd say, any questions? Anybody have any questions? And from listening to it, it sounds like they were unscripted. It doesn't seem like they were planted or anything. And people would ask him questions, then he would answer them and be funny. And and obviously they're picking the ones that are sort of the best of the best. But there was like, because he did that movie Easy Money.
Oh yeah, with Joe Pesci.
Yeah, and so there's a so you hear a woman in the back go. My husband mentioned that you're in Easy Money. What's Easy Money? And he just goes, the way you make it, honey, that's easy money. And it sounds for all the world like it was just that, like, you know, he didn't know what the question was coming, but he came right back with the answer, which is, and that's what comes from being up and being a guy who performed 7 nights a week for 10 years, you know, before he, you know, who continued to perform even after he was famous. I mean, that's a guy who didn't, you know, who stayed out there and stayed doing it and stayed sharp.
Yeah, normally if you were a comic that made it to such a degree where you could open up a chain of nightclubs named after yourself, you would have like a stable MC or have somebody bring you out, or like his HBO specials. Maybe he'd come on and kind of do like a guest spot, but he was still doing the grunt work. He was still up there every night warming up the crowd. I mean, at least for the New York showcases, he would be there and kind of really taking it on himself to make sure that these working guys that were working their way up would get his time and his, you know, his respect, in a sense, to kind of like get their push going as strong as they could. So
I will say that the other thing about Dangerfield, and I am such a sucker for this. I mean, this is a thing that there's stuff that just that I find I don't know, I remember romantic is the right word, charming or just endearing, and that is the, it is almost exclusively, it is usually, this is an East Coast thing, but it is the sort of, it is like the immigrant story and the, you know, and the cultural blending, and like, because I don't know if he was born here, but I know that at most he came here when he was very, very young. I think he may have been from, like Hungary or something, or Prague or something. But it was just like from some Eastern Bloc country where it was clearly not, you know, like not where you want to like live and spend your formative years.
Yeah, humor kind of springs from.
It's really
He was actually born in Long Island.
Okay,
his parents were Hungarian.
Yeah.
Ancestors.
So he's a first generation, and it's that, you know.
Actually, his father was a vaudeville performer, but he did come from Hungarian immigrants somewhere down the line.
And when was he born? It would have been
21.
30, 21. So, but it is like, it's like that sort of, you know, the kind of you know, the immigrant family, or in his case, you know, it's like the Hungarian the background, and then the dad who's vaudeville, and then he's growing up in New York, and it's like this sort of the kind of feeling like, you know, you're a foreigner but kind of not, and then, you know, and then obviously the impact of Jewish culture, because his because I think his Rodney Dangerfield, but his, is it Jerry? What's his first name? Something Cohen.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously the impact of Jewish culture on comedy, and specifically that era and that region of the country. I mean, there's just no, that is such a huge imprint and such a huge stamp on the world of comedy that people don't even, it's so big that you don't even see it.
Yeah.
When I was talking to Indigo Calais, who's an illustrator and a designer, we were talking about comic books and we were kind of bonding over Mad Magazine. And
nice.
I said the great thing about Mad Magazine was that, I mean, it was one of those things where Mad Magazine, in a way, was sort of a great, it was kind of a great comedy primer for me to read, because it was like before, it was like learning almost a different language. You know, they think about how you can teach a kid two languages, you know, from birth, and they won't even really consciously be aware of it. They can learn two languages simultaneously. They don't have the block we do of like, oh my God, I've got to learn French. You can just teach a kid languages simultaneously, and they just accept it. They're like, okay, I'll just take whatever you give me.
Yeah.
You just teach them, you know, you teach them English and Spanish simultaneously, and they grasp it. And it sounds weird, but like reading Mad Magazine and submerging myself in that so heavily when I was a kid, that is a whole style of, you know, that borscht belt,
yeah,
Jewish
very much so.
Yeah, that very like verbose and very sort of corny and shticky, but very linguistically dexterous. You know, the kind of comedy and the use of the language, and again folding in things like Yiddish, and the fact that they would, you know, constantly talk about something being for Schluggener, you know, and you just kind of go, that's awesome. And I don't even, you know, I have no idea what it means, where it comes from. At that point, I don't know the history of it. But I think that's wired into the American consciousness, that strain of humor. And so I think we instinctively respond to that because that footprint is like so big on every comedian, wherever he's from, because everything you modeled yourself on came from there. I mean, it's just so – and Dangerfield is like – and plus, as we've talked about with so many people, he had the great shtick, which is the, you know – my family tree goes back to a stump, you know, or whatever. You know, it's like the guy who gets no respect, and yet he gets no respect. But here's the paradox about Rodney Dangerfield's persona. He's the guy who gets no respect, but he's not like a beta male. He's not a pushover. He doesn't sound like a nebbish, like a pussy. He's still kind of aggro and sort of, you know, and kind of edgy and aggressive. And he actually ends that comedy record by saying, I mean, he does 90 minutes of, like, what a loser he is. And then at the end he says, there's a honk, and he goes, oh, I'm a rides here. And he said, you know, normally people end a show and they talk about, you know, what a great audience you are, the best audience ever. And he goes, the hell with that. F you. I can't wait to get the hell out of here. And he just...
and probably the closest analog we have to him right now is Lewis Black. That kind of lovable schlump, but who's just so angry.
Yeah. And like you don't want to F with.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's the thing. And how do you do that and pull it off? And it's like, it's because you're a freaking genius.
It just, it always feels like if you were at a bar some night, just down on your luck, had a rough day or a rough week, and you just sort of saunter in there and you just like, you want a beer and like just be left alone. And you look across the bar and there's a guy that looks like he's been there for like eons, and you get him to start talking to you, he will spin you yarn and be like, oh, you think you got it bad? And then like, here comes 15 in a row.
My mother breastfed me through a straw.
Yeah, you know, and you're just like, suddenly your day is better, and now you love this guy. And if somebody messed with him, you'd fight for him in a second, but he'd be like, no, I got this. Don't worry about it, kid.
Yeah, and he recognized, you know, the importance of comedy to other people. I saw an interview with Dangerfield one time, and what was really great about him, too, is that he would do interviews where he wouldn't shtick. I mean, he'd tell the story of how he came to be in comedy. But he, and I can't do it. I wish I could do his accent, because there's something that sounds... There's a thing where, like, stories and just hearing somebody talk about that, it sounds so much more, I know, like, authentic or genuine when it's done in that weird working-class East Coast accent where you just, you know, all those stories carry so much more weight, and everything sounds so much more, like, the wisdom is just so much heavier. But he talked about the importance of comedy, and he said, you know, he's like, some guys get off... What do you say? Some guys get off work and everybody's got their thing. He's like, some guys get off work and they get their pint and that's what they need to get through the day. And he's like, you know, he's like, for some people it's not a pint, it's a laugh. And he's like, I'm the guy who gives you the laugh. And I mean, that's, you know, that is not unlike, and that is a thing I really admire. That is, there was at the at the thing last night. There was a woman who said she's like I had a bad last couple of years. She's like, the last year and a half. She's like I won't bore you with the details. She's like, the last year and a half sucked. I had a terrible last couple of years. And she's like, but I've been, you know, listening to you for a long time, and I've been listening to you and Dawn, and it's like you know and you have it, to some degree, you know, made it better, you know, because we do something retarded, and you can kind of go, well, I'm not spilling food on myself, or I'm not a jagoff hanging banners of my own face everywhere and horrifying people, you know, or it's just you just laugh and you forget about it and that is worth its weight in gold, and Dangerfield never really forgot that. So
a couple of interesting little things. I mean, odd, interesting things on the Wikipedia entry for Rodney Dangerfield, by the way. Apparently he and Sam Kinison were very good friends.
Oh yeah,
and that would be an evening.
Seriously,
hanging out with them. I can't even imagine. No,
another
thing. When he died, he actually died from complications of a surgery he had undergone. He was a month and a half short of his 83rd birthday. His wife held an event to celebrate his life, basically, that had a skywriter write the word respect in the sky. Each guest was given a live monarch butterfly to release at a Native American butterfly release ceremony led by Farrah Fawcett.
Wow.
And his headstone at Westwood Village Memorial Cemetery is merely just a big granite slab that says on it, Rodney Dangerfield, there goes the neighborhood.
Awesome. Excellent. Good for him. That's how I want to go out.
Yeah, the music video Sam Kinison had for Wild Thing starts with a montage actually in a bar, and it's Sam talking with John Bon Jovi and Rodney Dangerfield.
Oh my God!
And Sam takes off, and it's John Bon Jovi looking for a good time, and then just the most creepy, uncomfortable, like pseudo gay. Come on, of Rodney
to John Bon Jovi.
Yeah, he's like, I never knew you cared.
And then Sam, and John runs out. I forgot all about that. Oh my God! All right, so you know, just because of that, we'll end this. I'll actually end with, and because I know there are another folks who listen to this program at work or occasionally with small fry around. I do believe this is not entirely bleeped. So I think that there's going to be an utterance of the F word at the end that I missed the first time around that I keep forgetting to fix. So we'll. We'll end the show with something here, just a second. So again, but a little if HR is down, is near your cubicle, just a little word to the wise there. Big Jim Willig, you can find out more about him at BigJimWillig.com. Anything going on in the immediate future that people should know about, sir?
No.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to laugh. It was just
This weekend is my 1 year anniversary with my lovely lady Malia. So we're going to be going to the beach. Sadly, I mean I enjoy your company, sweetheart. I mean, great,
you're a real ladies' man.
Yeah, really.
We were talking about this in the kitchen before the show, and it's like I said, yeah, did you get my email? I think he's like, yeah. Well, I have this anniversary, and I mean, not that I'm not happy about it. It's a great. I love her, but yeah.
So it's well. Just tell her that the first anniversary. You know, it's not paper; it's dilithium, and so you have to. Wonder Northwest
it's the GeekCon anniversary.
I will pay you 30 pieces of latinum if we can sort of
exactly
just kind of hang out. No, but no. I got this whole thing planned with her at the beach in Lincoln City. So we're gonna go down there and have just some lovely time out of town and just sort of. You know, reconnect and
release butterflies.
Yeah, and that's what it's all about.
Okay. You can find out
the gentler side of Big Jim Willig.
It's there.
Find out more at BigJimWillig.com. That is at BigJimWillig.com. Dawn Taylor can be heard, of course, here, and then Ham-Fisted Radio at Cascadia.fm. Wednesdays, 4 p.m. Pacific time, Cascadia.fm, are also at HamFistedRadio.com. Go to WonderNorthwest.com, WonderNW.com. That is WonderNW.com to find out about all the stuff happening this weekend. We'll be part of some of that. And then MayOfTheDead.com is your website for finding out about the Portland Zombie Walk, which happens tomorrow, also the Portland Zombie Prom. And then coming up the 27th of this month, it'll be the Zombie Film Festival at the Hollywood Theater. We'll have more details on that coming up, plus Zombie Game Day at Guardian Games. That is for May of the Dead, and it's mayofthedead.com. And Finally, wrap it to a big one. Big final thanks to everybody who came out to Barnes & Noble last night. That is, it was awesome and splendiferous and wonderful. Someone will remind me on Monday to say that during Legion of News, and that'll be that. So thank you to everybody. We'll wrap this up with the Rodney that I mentioned. After a brief musical interlude, we'll have an encore of the day's Legion of News and an encore of this very fine radio program. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milk Packing District in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. As always, we thank you for listening, and it is Friday, May 13th, 2011, and be safe. Have a good weekend. See you Monday. Bye now.
Welcome to contemporary American history. I'm Professor Turgeson. You know, a lot of people think history is just facts. It's just information about the past, but not me. I mean, I hold history very sacred. Sacred. The way the farmer looks at the earth and he holds it sacred. The way a Christian takes the Bible and he holds it sacred. The way a lot of people hold their marriage sacred. That's how I feel about it. So why don't we dive right in by interpreting one of the easiest events in the last 20 years of American history. Now, can someone tell me why in 1975 we pulled our troops out of Vietnam?
The failure of Vietnamization to win popular support caused an ongoing erosion of confidence in the various American but illegal Saigon regimes.
Is she right? Because I know that's the popular version of what went on there, and a lot of people like to believe that. I wish I could, but I was there. I wasn't here in a classroom, hoping I was right, thinking about it. I was up on my knees in rice paddies with Guns and Edwards going up against Charlie, slugging it out with him while pussies like you were back there partying, putting headbands on, doing drugs, listening to the goddamn Beatle albums.
Hey, Professor, take it easy, will you? I mean, these kids, they were in grade school at the time. And me, I'm not a fighter. I'm a lover.
Well, I didn't know you wanted to get involved with the discussion, Mr. Helper. But since you want to help, maybe you can help me, okay? You remember that thing we had about 30 years ago called that Korean conflict? Yeah, where we failed to achieve victory. How come we didn't cross the 38th parallel and push those rice eaters back to the Great Wall of China and take the work brick and nuke them back into the fucking Stone Age River? How come? Tell me why. Say it. Say it.
All right. I'll say it. Because Truman was too much of a pussy wimp to let MacArthur go in there and blow out those commie bastards.
Good answer. Good answer. Like the way you think. Yeah.